Good morning.
So.
I'm calling this meeting of the TRPA Governing Board to order. The date is Wednesday, March 23, 2022. It is 10:18. First item on the agenda is roll call. Mari, would you please take the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Here.
Mr. Bruce?
Here.
Mrs. Sagaski?
I'm here.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Here.
Ms. Faustinos?
Here.
Mr. Bass?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Hicks? Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Honigman?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novacell?
Here.
Mr. Rice?
Here.
Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you, Maria. We'll now go over the meeting rules for the day. To observe and participate in the meeting, go to www.trpa.gov, select March 23rd, 2022, Governing Board meeting on the calendar, and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. To participate in this governing board meeting with your comments, raise your hand in Zoom by clicking raise hand at the bottom of your screen at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the committee. If you have used the dial-in numbers to join us by telephone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and be unmuted. To board members, if you wish to speak, you can raise your hand in the Zoom. You will find the hand icon on the bottom of your screen. A reminder that board members may not use the chat box to make any comments or to have sidebar conversations. Please, everyone, remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. And all members, remember that all members should be able to turn on their cameras at this point in time. We have capacity for that. At agenda item number 8A, all governing board members will move into a closed session, leaving the webinar and returning to agenda item number 8B. Members of the public will remain on this platform for the entirety of the meeting. So members of the public, just bear with us while we go into closed session. We'll go into closed session. We'll come right back. Okay. At this point in time, I'd like to move to item number 2, Pledge of Allegiance. And Catherine, if you could please lead us in that, that'd be fantastic.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Catherine. Appreciate that. We'll move to item 3, approval of the agenda. Joanne, are there any changes to the agenda?
There are no changes, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. We'll deem the agenda approved as noticed. And we will move to item number 4, approval of minutes. There are 2 sets of minutes this month. One from January 26, 2022, on page 25 of your packets, and one from February 23, 2022, on page 63 of your packets. Are there any questions from anybody regarding those, either of those sets of minutes? Not seeing any.
But that's okay. I had no comments or suggested changes to the January 26th minutes, but I did have some clerical edits that I shared with Maria in connection with the February 23rd, 2022 set of minutes.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much. And unless there's any other questions or comments regarding those minutes, do I have a motion to approve those?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the minutes of the Governing Board meeting of January 26, 2022, as presented, And I move to approve, further move to approve the February 23rd, 2022 set of minutes, subject to a few clerical edits.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Shelley. We have a motion. Do we have any questions or comments? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, please say no.
I'll just be abstaining because I was not present for those meetings.
Okay, thank you so much. Hearing no, no noes and one abstention, the motion passes. Thank you. We'll move to item number five. TRPA consent calendar. There are six items on consent, three of which were reviewed by Operations and Governance Committee, one that was reviewed by the Legal Committee, one that was reviewed by the Advisory Planning Commission, and one that was not reviewed by any committee. As a reminder of the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in Zoom to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. And we'll just go through these consent items real quickly. Shelley, may we please have a summary on the February financials, the El Dorado County Air Quality Mitigation Fund release, and the environmental monitoring of the Tahoe Keys Lagoons Aquatic Weeds Control Methods Test Project contract from your Operations and Governance Committee this morning?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, the February financials were approved. Chris does a phenomenal job of keeping us well informed about our fiscal health and any challenges we may be facing. Thankfully, everyone will be happy to know that our cash flow is strong, driven in large measure by application fees. As you noted, the committee also heard a request by El Dorado County for the release of air quality mitigation funds in the amount of $165,000 to fund a Class 1 bike path. The committee recommended that the governing board approve that item. In addition, we heard a presentation concerning a recommendation to authorize TRPA to enter into the contract for environmental monitoring of the Tahoe Keys Lagoon Aquatic Weed Control Methods Test Project. The committee recommended that the governing board provide that authorization to the executive director. The contract will exceed $100,000. In fact, it's likely to cost approximately $1 million. Obviously, this is being done to expedite the selection of a contractor to perform the monitoring lab services in support of the methods testing. So it will be funded, as indicated in the packet, by LTRA money, so it won't be a hit to our general fund. And according to Dennis Labaglo, we have received inquiries from three potential bidders. The RFP was issued on March 11th, and proposals are due on the 8th of April.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much for that detailed summary. Really appreciate that. With respect to the item on the, first let me ask, does anyone have any questions or comments regarding any of those consent items? Okay, I'm seeing none. We'll go to the legal committee consent item. John, would you please help us with a summary on that?
Yes, the legal committee heard the resolution of enforcement action for Justin Schaaf and Mountain Addiction. This case, it also would resolve the pending case of TRPA versus Justin Schaaf and Mountain Addiction LLC, case number 2-20-CV-00945. After discussion with staff and a staff presentation, the committee unanimously recommended that the full board accept the $20,000 settlement agreement to resolve both the TRPA violation and the district court action.
Thank you, John. Any questions or comments regarding that consent item? Not seeing any. We will, there's also the fifth item on consent is the appointment of Transportation Advisory Committee for purposes of adaptively managing TSC-1 threshold standard. Information on this item can be found on page 139 of your packets. And did anyone have any question regarding that consent item? Seeing none, we will go to the final item, the sixth item, is the appointment of Thresh, is the appointment of Threshold Update Initiative stakeholders, working group members, and information on that can be found on page 145 of your packets. Any questions or comments on that one? Again, I'm seeing none, hearing none.
Mark?
Yeah.
I just want to thank Jim Lawrence and Bill Yates for their willingness to serve on that committee.
Absolutely. Thank you both. Really very much appreciate it. Okay, so at this point in time, I'm going to turn this over to staff for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Catherine Hanglin with TRPA. For the record, I'll help you with public comment. If any member of the public would like to comment on the consent calendar, please raise your hand now in Zoom, either by clicking on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen or by dialing *9 if you have dialed in. And we do have one hand raised, Ann Nichols. If you'd like to unmute yourself, you can address the governing board.
I wanted to speak, thank you, on just not on the consent item, but just the general public comment. Is that going to be heard soon or is it next?
There will be general public comment at the end of the meeting. There'll be also public comment at the end of every agenda item for that specific item.
About what time will this meeting be over? You know?
Joanne, do we have any estimate on that?
I would estimate, Mr. Chair, that we'll be getting close early afternoon, 1 or 2 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay, with that, is there any further public comment?
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. With that, I would entertain a motion with respect to the consent calendar.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the consent calendar as presented.
Thank you. We have a motion. Will Catherine, or actually Maria, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad-Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagasti?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagasti?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
It says I have to push *6 every time I want to talk. So I'm just letting you know my answer is yes, but it may take me a while.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Bass?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Excellent. Thank you, Maria. Appreciate it. We are now on agenda item 6, and we'll start, and these are planning matters. We'll start with 6A, City of South Lake Tahoe Recreation Aquatic Center Project Overview. Information on this item can be found on page 147. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the Zoom webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. At this point in time, I'd like to pass this over to Paul Nielsen, who's handling this item, and he will introduce Joe Irvin with the city to present. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Paul Nielsen, and I'm a special projects manager at TRPA. This agenda item is a non-action, informational-only item that involves a presentation by City of South Lake Tahoe representatives on the city's recently adopted 56-acre master plan and the proposed South Lake Tahoe Recreation and Aquatic Center. On the board's agenda this month is consideration of a community plan amendment related to how height is proposed to be calculated for the recreation center. And on your agenda next month will be a staff recommendation on the recreation center project application. There are two purposes for today's presentation. One is to show the board and the public more context and background for the community plan amendment. That amendment proposes a very targeted, limited scope height amendment that is needed to support the design and function of the recreation center project. The proposed amendment only applies to the recreation center project. The second purpose of the presentation is to give you a preview of the recreation center project that will be before you next month for action. We wanted to give you a better feel for the site, the setting, and the proposed building. Next month, we will provide a more detailed presentation on the project itself. So before I pass this over to the city, I wanted to mention that you'll hear reference to the city's 56-acre master plan in the presentation. And I want to clarify that this is not a master plan that needs to be approved by TRPA. TRPA requires approval of master plans for things like ski resort expansions or expansions of the airport. This master plan, somewhat like the Lake Tahoe Community College master plan, is a plan the city developed to establish a community vision for the property and to guide its future development over time. And with that, I would like to introduce Joe Irving, the city manager. Over to you, Joe.
Thank you very much, Paul. And good morning, Chairman Bruce and members of the governing board. I'm Joe Irvin, the city manager with the City of South Lake Tahoe. And if it appears as if I'm speaking loud, it's because I have a helicopter landing right at the moment outside my office here at the airport. Please forgive that. We're definitely delighted to have the opportunity to present to you today perhaps one of the largest projects on the South Shore that the city is engaged in right now. The project I'm referring to is the 56-acre master plan and the recreation, the multi-generational recreation and aquatic center. This project aligns really nicely with the regional plan that the TRPA adopted in December of 2012. It helps to provide access to recreation amenities for our entire neighborhoods, all the neighborhoods in South Lake. The connectivity to our bike trails and pathways is built and has potential to even be built to a more robust manner. So I just want to highlight that it truly is an iconic project that integrates with the regional's vision of the regional plan. I want to take a minute and step back and provide an overview to everyone on how we got to this point. And it really started to gain traction in November of 2016, when the voters of South Lake Tahoe voted to approve a 2% transient occupancy tax increase, specifically to generate revenue for recreation amenities in South Lake. And the first project that was put on that list of projects to be built with the TOT was the Multi-Generational Recreation and Aquatic Center. So we are delighted to be here today, as I said, to go over the highlights of that project and the 56-acre master plan and how we got to where we are right now. To give some accountability to TOT, a revenue that we've created, the Measure P Oversight Committee was formed. They work closely with our Parks and Recreation Commission, as well as they've created a Parks and Recreation Foundation that'll help us build a more robust programmatic funding stream and also assist in any capital needs that we need for the recreation center. We could move to the next slide, please, Paul. I want to highlight the collaboration also that's come forward through this project. The California Tahoe Conservancy has been a great partner on this. They provided money to conduct the master plan. But the even greater collaboration effort, in my opinion, there was the city and the county of El Dorado's partnership to really come up with a long-term maintenance, management, and development agreement for how 56-acre site can be managed, maintained, and developed over the years to come. In January of this year, both those respective boards, my city council and El Dorado County Board of Supervisors, approved this management lease agreement that set forth a great foundation for future development and management of the 56-acre site. So that collaboration that we have with California Tahoe Conservancy and El Dorado County to get us here has been really wonderful. And I welcome the work from Supervisor Novosel and others that were leaders on that with me and Don Ashton from the county. I think it's important to recognize that this project, as I said, it integrates well with the regional plan. It's building upon successes that this area of the city has had in recent years. The picture up here shows the community plaza up in the top left corner. That's really known as Lakeview Commons, El Dorado Beach. There's concession there. There's a new boat ramp. There's Champions Plaza. All of these things have been great amenities in the last few years. And the trail network around here has been improved with Harrison Avenue improvements. The pedestrian connectivity to the 56-acre site from those existing improved infrastructure amenities has just been wonderful. And it connects, quite frankly, an area that a lot of people who live in South Lake Tahoe refer to as the heart of the city. I think 56-acre has the potential to be redefined as the heart of the city and really create this place that neighbors who live in the various neighborhoods in South Shore can come to recreate, gather, and enjoy the beautiful views of Lake Tahoe right on the South Shore at this iconic location. And with that, I'd like to take the opportunity to turn it over to John Hitchcock. He's our planning manager, to talk through the process that we took to get to the 56-acre master plan approval. And he will then turn it over to Jim Marino, our capital improvements project manager, who is leading our effort with the rec center to give you a preview of what that looks like. So thank you very much for the time again. And I know all of us will be available to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Urban. Good morning, Chairman Bruce and members of the governing board. For the record, John Hitchcock, planning manager with the city of South Lake Tahoe. Can I move to the next slide, please? Just wanted to put the 56-acre master plan in context. The site is, as Mr. Urban noted, is the heart of South Lake Tahoe and includes a mix of city and county-owned lands. The site is bordered on the north by Lake Tahoe, on the east by Rufus Allen Boulevard, and a residential neighborhood. On the south is El Tahoe Ball Fields, the middle school, Boys and Girls Club, and to the west is the Harrison Avenue Commercial District. 56 acres is the city and county's recreation hub. It includes existing recreation center, the ice rink, campground by the lake, and Lakeview Commons. It also includes other institutional uses that are located in this district, but outside of 56 acres, which includes Eldo County Superior Court, the City Police Department, the Boys and Girls Club, Lake Tahoe Unified School District, Lake Tahoe Community College, and also last but not least is U.S. Forest Service LTBMU office is also located within this district. Master planning efforts began in earnest in 2021. Next slide, please. So beginning in 2021, we started this master planning process. You can imagine that it was at the height of pandemic and it required us to really get creative on how we went through this master planning process in order to engage the public in this important process. The master plan vision itself includes the development of the multi-regional recreation center and aquatic complex, proposed civic government center, outdoor event venue, also connecting 56 acres to Lakeview Commons and the Altamira site, and also improve pedestrian access to Lakeview Commons and also improving also the intersection improvements of Rufus Allen Boulevard. The plan also includes pedestrian and bicycle facilities connecting to surrounding destinations and also to the overall regional pedestrian and bicycle network, and includes active and passive recreation opportunities within 56 acres. The purpose of the master plan is to develop a comprehensive strategy for the project, site, facilities, programs, and services, which is responsive to the community's demographics, social background, and multi-generational recreational needs. The plan will serve as a guide for the city and capital improvement planning, programmatic planning, maintenance and operational planning, and budgetary decision-making. Just to give you a little, how does this master plan relate to the Visual Tahoe Area Plan Amendment that will be heard later on today? Because of the rec center and the need to span large spaces, the city is requesting an amendment to the Visual Tahoe Community Plan to allow lower roof pitches and also additional height in order to accommodate these large institutional structures. The master plan also relates to the future area plan that the city will be commencing that planning process here, likely later in this year. Much of the information that we've gleaned through this master planning process will be incorporated into the Visual Tahoe Area Plan when we start that planning process. Next slide, please. As I mentioned earlier, we had to take a creative approach to our public outreach process. We developed a core planning team that included the city, county, and CTC staff who met on a bi-weekly basis to discuss the master plan project as well as the recreation center. We also developed a robust public engagement plan to guide our outreach efforts, engage a diverse range of park users, residents, visitors, community organizations, and local officials. The public engagement effort included focus group interviews with key stakeholders, on-site self-guided tour, online surveys, and we had 3 online public workshops. In total, 10 online focus stakeholder meetings were conducted. Over 150 community members participated in the 3 workshops. Over 50 community members actually participated on the on-site self-guided tour at 56 acres, and over 200 individuals participated in the online survey. Input and feedback provided by the stakeholders and the public were incorporated and considered in developing the conceptual land use alternatives for the 56-acre master plan. Next slide, please. This is the conceptual plan adopted by City Council on January 18, 2022. It includes a new entrance into 56 acres, which is what we're calling the Main Street, which can be closed off for special events such as farmers markets or food truck events. The campground, which used to be located to the north of the site adjacent to US High 50, will be relocated to the south, and the facility will be upgraded to include RV hookups and as well as yurts and cabin camping, and so improving the quality of the camping experience in the heart of South Lake Tahoe. The rec center will be relocated to the north of the site. The reason that we did this is to redevelop the existing rec center, which is located south of the ice arena, would have been cost prohibitive to the city. And also at the same time, during the construction of the new rec center, we wanted to have access to the existing rec center so that visitors and locals still had recreation opportunities during the construction cycle. The project also includes play and gathering spaces as well as adventure play. The existing rec center for now will be repurposed for city and county government uses, and at some point in the future will be demolished. The existing senior center and historical museum cabins and art league will remain unchanged. That's located to the southwest of the site. You see the notation that says cultural hub. However, we have been discussions with those organizations that are interested in doing public displays of historic artifacts, as well as putting artwork on display as part of an art and historic tour and walk. Next slide, please. This is just a simulation to show us the proposed new entrance in the 56 acres, the Main Street. It will include parallel parking on the Main Street. But the really neat thing about the Main Street is the ability to close this down and have special events in 56 acres that will attract locals as well as visitors. Next slide, please. At our last workshop, our 3rd online workshop, we did poll our participants and asked them about how comfortable they were with moving forward with the master plan and the associated alternative. 94% said they were comfortable or somewhat comfortable with moving forward with the plan. Next slide, please. The city did prepare an initial study, mitigated neck deck for the master plan as well as for the rec center. We did receive comments, and my understanding is you also received comments on the master plan and the rec center. We did respond to those comments. I believe that our response comments that we included in our initial study is included in your staff packet. The comment, there are three main comments. One had to do with impacts to the Pony Express Trail, Lincoln Highway, impacts to aesthetics and the scenic roadway corridor, and in CEQA segmentation. The analysis concluded that there was no impact to Lincoln Highway or the Pony Express Trail. The Lincoln Highway essentially follows Highway 50, and Highway 50 is, you know, paved over any trace of Lincoln Highway many, many years ago. Our analysis concluded that there are no traces of the Pony Express Trail within the project site itself. Historically, the Pony Express Trail, these are solitary individual riders that took many different paths, and those trails are not traceable at this time anymore. There are designated historic resource related to Pony Express Trail in the basin. However, they're located outside the project areas, such as Friday Station on the Nevada side, as well as the Pony Express sculpture located adjacent to Hera. The analysis also concluded that there was no impacts to aesthetics or the scenic corridor. I'd like to remind the governing board members, this is an urban corridor, which is generally urbanized areas where man-made development is the dominant feature. However, because the rec center is located approximately 160 feet from Lake Tahoe Boulevard, and all the trees are being retained between the proposed site and Highway 50, the proposed rec center will be adequately screened from the scenic highway corridor. There was also a comment that this segment of US 50 is a designated California scenic highway corridor. That's actually incorrect. It's actually eligible to be a scenic highway corridor, and a corridor protection plan would have to be approved in order to get the designation as California Scenic Highway Corridor. CEQA segmentation. There was a comment that the city segmented the environmental analysis process for the 56 acres as well as the rec center. That is not the case. The initial study that was prepared by the city analyzed the impacts of the 56 acre at full build out as well as the actual rec center itself. With that, concludes my presentation. I will turn it over to Mr. Marino. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, John.
Next slide, please. Good morning, Chairman Bruce, members of the board. My name is Jim Marino. I'm the Capital Improvements Program and Facilities Manager for the City of South Lake Tahoe. And I am also tasked with being the project manager for the new Recreation Center project. For purposes of today, we'll keep the design information brief, just one slide, as the project will be before the governing board in April for application. So in this slide, I'd like to just briefly discuss the exterior materiality of the project and the elevations to kind of give you a size of scope, scale, roof design, pitch, and exterior materials. As you can see, the alpine or the design definitely has an alpine feel. We're using very robust exterior materials and precast concrete panels, stone facades, cementitious fiberboard siding, corrugated metal siding, and standard metal siding, to name a few. I'd like to point out that all materials are fire resistant, which is a good use in today's day and age up here. And all of the colors blend very well into the site. The upper elevation, which is the east elevation of the facility, shows the entry point into the facility just left of center. To the left of that is our first floor locker room space, and behind that is the actual natatorium or swim center. To the right side is the gymnasium, and you can see the height and scale of that facility there. The next elevation, which is the west elevation, shows the natatorium on the left side with doors exiting into a common space. And it also shows on the first floor your fitness space, your dance studios, multi-purpose, and a second floor fitness area as well. Just to the center,
is the lobby space that we had talked about, and just to the right is the mechanical equipment and an auditorium behind that. The next elevation down, the south elevation shows the natatorium and the mechanical space to the left. Just center is the lobby. Locker space and lobby just to the left of that, and the administration and gymnasium space is to the right. And finally, the lowest elevation there, which is the north elevation, shows the gymnasium and mechanical space on the left, lobby in the center. Just right center, right to right of the center, shows the vent space on the second floor. And just to the right of that shows the natatorium facility and mechanical spaces behind those. Next slide, please. So more info on both of these projects, master plan and the rec center, can be found at these links. We have a considerable amount of information on both of those links in case anybody wants to do any homework. And that concludes our presentation for today. And we'd be more than happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Really appreciate it. Paul, did you have any follow-up on any of this? Or should I take it to the board?
Yeah, no follow-up. Mr. Chairman, we'll be back next month with more specifics on the project itself and a recommendation. But we're available to take questions on what you just heard from the city.
Great. Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Jim, John, and Joe, for all weighing in on this and for your presentation, for giving us this background information. This is really important for us to understand. And it was kind of a it's good for us to be able to see this and envision it, and we appreciate that very much. Do we have anybody on the board that would like to ask questions or that have comments? I'll just start with kind of the order of my screen. Sue, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I just want to say on behalf of El Dorado County how thrilled we are to see this project moving forward. And I want to thank Joe Irwin and all the staff of the city. It was a very, very collaborative situation and moving forward. I think, we all are in agreement that this is our central park of the South Shore, and it deserves this kind of look, see, and change. And we are thrilled. It will fit in so nicely with our county library being off to one side of it, and the idea of bringing seniors into a multi-generational area, and just, again, the food truck presentation, all that, it just sounds so exciting. We're very thrilled. And thank you again, Joe, for all your work and the staff and for the collaboration. It was monumental and very important. Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. And I'll just be looking for hands because chats are more difficult to see on Zoom. So anybody else looking for hands raised, please, Belinda.
Hi, thank you, Chair Bruce. And to the city, I'll just add my congratulations on a phenomenal process during this time of COVID. I'm totally impressed at being able to pull this off. And I had a question about the Pony Express Trail. I have to fully disclose, I spent a lot of time with the National Park Service on historic preservation issues, and things like historic trails of NPS quality are obviously, something I look at closely. And in other circumstances, because we all know, of course, that these trails is very difficult to establish alignment that are consistent with historical records and all of that. But one issue I just wanted to clarify with staff is whether or not you consulted with the Park Service, and if there was any consideration given to potentially adding some signage to the site that would, express an acknowledgement that the Pony Express went through this general vicinity, something of that nature. I know that that's been applied in other situations with National Historic Trails, so just wanted to hear if there had been any consultation, number one, and then number two, if there's any consideration for that type of signage.
This is John Hitchcock again. I do not believe we actually consulted with the Park Service, but we're willing to do that. And actually, one of the concepts that we have been talking about internally is creating a historic interpretation trail as part of 56 acres. Originally, the focus was really on the history of the Washoe tribe, but I believe, and I fully support, adding the Pony Express Trail to that that historic interpretive trail system that we're proposing for this site.
Thank you, John. No further commentary from me, Chairman.
Okay, thanks so much. And Shelley, I do see your hand raised, so please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I guess given the concerns that have been raised about visibility of the, and I understand there's quite a substantial setback for this recreation center, were any other siting options explored? This appears to be the most massive structure that will be built on this site. And I'm wondering if any other siting alternatives were analyzed.
Yeah, Jim Marino's stepping up to provide some input on that.
Thank you for the question. And yes, we did discuss several alternatives on the site, but there were really some basis points for selecting the north site, which we're calling a north site where it's positioned now. One is that our community really spoke out about keeping the existing rec center in operation during the construction of a new rec center. So that eliminated the existing site right from the get-go. The second community input that we heard was that the community wanted the new rec center sited closer to Highway 50 and Rufus Allen Boulevard for purposes of recognition, for purposes of visibility for the public to know it's there and that it's accessible to the public. And then we looked at the existing campground area that is in the current design or current operation of the site, and realized that if we mixed the rec center into the center of that, we will have divided up the project or divided up the acreage in such a way that the master planning wouldn't really be feasible. We couldn't really get a campground on the north or the south or any of the other amenities that have been developed out of the 56-acre plan. So that's essentially how we settled on the north site. And I do want to mention that was a collaborative decision between the city and the county.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, I am looking for hands raised, either just by the person or by the hand raise function, and I don't see any at this point in time. So that may wrap up our questions relating to this or comments. I was going to give it one more moment. Okay, so this was information only. Let's see here. Bear with me for 1 second. At this point in time, I'd like to ask Catherine to take us to public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If any member of the public would like to comment on this item, please raise your hand now in Zoom, either by clicking on the hand icon on the bottom of your screen or by dialing *9 if you have called in. We do have one hand raised, Mr. Chair, Steve Teixeira. If you can unmute, you can address the board.
Thank you, Catherine, Mr. Chairman, and members of the governing board. Steve Teixeira on behalf of Tahoe Chamber. Just to reinforce the comments that were made in response to your good questions, we have followed this project all along. It's an exciting project. And I think some of the key elements Mr. Marino talked about are the extensive public outreach, particularly during a challenging time of COVID. There was a lot of participation, a lot of input on the siting and the overall master plan itself. So this is an exciting project. I know you're not acting today, but I think it was really important that your staff and the city staff gave you the context for the project today. Thank you.
Thank you. Catherine, please let me know if there's any others.
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you so much. At this point in time, bring it back to the board. I'm assuming there isn't any further question or comment since we just went through that process, but I wanted to give everybody one more chance. And I don't see any hands raised. So at this point in time, what I'd like to do is thank the presenters, thank staff, thank the city, public comment. Really appreciate your time on this, and we will move to our next item. That's item number 7, public hearings. 7A is the Vigo Al Tajo community plan to add a special height standard for the City of South Lake Tahoe Aquatics and Recreation Center. Information on the site can be found on page 149. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation or discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the Zoom webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Jen Self and John Hitchcock will be presenting this item, and we welcome them to our meeting today, and I'll hand it off here.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Good morning, and good morning to members of the board. I'm Jen Self, Principal Planner with TRPA for the record. I'm joined again by John Hitchcock for this presentation on the amendments. I want to echo the comments of the board, just thanking Joe Irvin, Jim Marino, and John for the presentation that you just heard, setting a little bit of the context of why this amendment is actually needed. So I'm going to provide you with a very brief overview, and then I'm going to turn it over to John Hitchcock with more of the details on the amendments. The city is here today seeking your approval and adoption of the amendments to the Vigo Al Tajo Community Plan, as provided in your packet and as we'll discuss further. This review considers conformity of the community plan amendments to the Lake Tahoe Regional Plan. So in order to make the approval and adoption, there will be two proposed motions that will require action on your part, and we will present those at the end of the discussion. The City of South Lake Tahoe and the TRPA Governing Board adopted the Vigo Al Tajo Community Plan back in 1995. Oh, excuse me, having some technical difficulties here. There we go. The plan includes a guiding vision for the area, as well as goals and policies, permissible land uses, and specific design standards to ensure that development is compatible with the natural and built environment. As John mentioned in the previous presentation, the city does plan to incorporate input from the 56-acre master plan process and develop an area plan for this area in the future. And as Paul mentioned, the proposed amendment before you today is really targeted for the allowable height and then the architectural design standards for the potential rec center only. The City Planning Commission and the City Council have reviewed the approved, reviewed and approved the proposed amendments as provided in your packet, and the City Council adopted the amendments in January 18th of this year. The amendments were heard before the RPIC on February 23rd, 2022, and the initial proposal actually applied to the entire 56-acre site. Based on RPIC recommended approval, there was a revision to only apply the changes to the Rec and Aquatic Center only and not the entire site. So that has been changed, and that was presented to APC, and that those changes were reflected in your packet as well. The amendments were heard before APC on March 9th of this year, and APC unanimously recommended approval to the governing board. And with that, I'm going to now turn it over to John Hitchcock, that's going to go through what the amendments are.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks. And Jen, if there was a PowerPoint that was part of that, we didn't see that as we were listening. And so I just wanted to make sure that if there is a PowerPoint that we on further information that we see that'd be great. Thanks.
Sure thing. There is actually not any slides for that particular presentation, but John does have some slides for his.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Bruce. Again, for the record, John Hitchcock, Planning Manager of Sea South Lake Tahoe. The item before you is the Bijou Ottawa Committee plan amendment for your consideration and possible approval. Next slide, please. Amendment purpose and need would allow additional building height up to 42 feet with no minimum cross slope or roof pitch requirements. The amendment, as Jennifer and Mr. Nielsen spoke to, would facilitate construction of the new South Lake Tahoe Recreation and Aquatic Center. We did take this to the RPIC Regional Plan Implementation Committee. They recommended approval with a slight adjustment to limit the amendment itself specifically just to the rec center. And then for any and height for all other structures within 56 acres would not change. It would follow the existing rules that are currently on the books today. And through the area planning process, we'll be re-looking at that when we start that planning process. Height at Lake Tahoe Community College and the Unified School Districts are not affected by this amendment, and because those heights are handled on an individual project basis by TRPA. And then, as mentioned, height for all the structures within 56 acres will be subject to Chapter 73 of the TRPA code. Next slide, please. Next slide is the location map, just to give you some context. The star there is a proposed recreation center. 56 acres is a kind of a sub-district of District 4, the Bijou Ottawa Community Plan, which is a district that is designated for government and institutional uses. It includes Lake Tahoe Unified School District, the City County Government Center on Johnson Boulevard, the U.S. Forest Service offices on the Lake Tahoe Community College campus, as well as the community college itself, and then STPD, which is located to the south. But as we mentioned, the amendment itself will just be specific to the rec center. Next slide, please. To give you context of where the rec center is located, it's being proposed for the to be moved to the northern portion of 56 acre, adjacent to the existing Eldorado County Library. In future build out, we'll also be proposing to develop a civic center and government offices building in 56 acres. Next slide, please. The reason that the amendment is needed, the current standard requires a roof pitch of 7 and 12. It's not feasible for large institutional buildings that require large spaces such as recreational center, gymnasiums, auditoriums to put that kind of roof pitch on. It would, having a 7-12 roof pitch would exceed the existing TRPA height standards of 42 feet. It would create a structure that's visually intrusive to the neighborhood. And in addition, it would increase energy demands to cool and heat large volume of space that's essentially not being used, which is inconsistent with the TRPA and city sustainability goals. Next slide, please. The city did prepare an initial study and a deck for this amendment. The initial study concluded that the amendment would not have a significant impact on the environment. The initial study, negative declaration was approved by the Planning Commission on December 16, 2021, adopted by the City Council on January 18, 2022, when we also adopted the 56-acre master plan. And our Planning Commission did review this project and issued a design review permit and a special use permit on March 10, 2022. And that concludes my presentation, and I can answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Jen, any follow-up on anything that John had to say?
No follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. I see that Bill has a hand up, and we'll start with Bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, John, and also to the city manager and everybody that presented on the master plan and the prior informational only area. I just want to comment from the standpoint of being chair of RPIC why this was limited to the rec center. When this matter came before us, if you look at page 151 of your packet, we only had this kind of map of the area, and the amendment was for all buildings that would be built within this blue area. We didn't have the picture on page 152 of the proposed master plan. And my only concern at the time And I realize there's been a lot of public comment that came in even before we had this agenda out on the public as to what was going to happen at this governing board meetings. And there's, to me, some amazing statements made in the opposition to this project. And I don't share those views at all. I have no vitriol or ill feeling towards the city, towards this project. I was just concerned that this project and the work of this master plan should go through the process of being an amendment to an area plan consistent with the way we were setting up the regional plan. And I felt that, you know, the purpose behind our regional plan implementation committee is just to make sure that projects that are going forward are consistent with our regional plan. And so we limited the height amendment to just the project that's going forward. This had a lot of work. It's obviously important to the community. And I had no problem with that. And that's the reason that our pick made that recommendation. I appreciate the city taking that recommendation and coming forward with that limited approach, and then coming back with an area plan amendment that would, in fact, incorporate all of the Bijou stuff that we have, I think, three different times. This would be the third. Done a height amendment or a change to accommodate the Boys and Girls Club and some other areas in there. So it's just good to have an overall view of what we're going to do in this really important area. And seeing the master plan, I have to say, I might have some issues with it. I'm concerned about Main Street, I have to tell you, coming off of 50 there and having another road that's coming off. And hopefully it'll be like a one-way street or something so that the public isn't going to come back through that into an area that already is pretty intense. As a person who eats a lot of meals at Sprouts, I just kind of know the difficulty of getting in and around that area. So that was just, you know, just looking at that master plan setup for the new Main Street. It looks nice on a piece of paper, but that's a pretty busy area. So anyway, I just want to clarify exactly why RPIC did what it did, why I raised some concerns about not knowing what all was going to be proposed in this master plan, because I didn't have anything before me. And I appreciate what the city has done. And I have, I just want to make clear that RPIC is probably in support of this, because that was our recommendation to the governing board last month. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I really appreciate that explanation of kind of where we were at RPIC, what happened at RPIC, and I agree with your comments here today. Are there any other questions or comments? There, Cody, please.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to say to the board that, yeah, we're very excited about this project. And I think that, you know, it definitely is set off the highway. I also wanted to remind the board that recently the tourist corps, I think it was just about a year ago, expanded farther west,
Cody,
where there's 56.
Cody, I don't know if anyone else is having a difficult time hearing you, but I'm having a hard time piecing together your comments. So is there a way that we could try to strengthen that connectivity? Can you try one more time?
Okay. Yeah. My comments are really just to thank the board and also to remind the board that we have the tourist corps that's just really bordering this area plan with those, you know, heights that are available in that area. So again, I just wanted to really thank the board for this approval and look forward to the project.
Thank you, Cody. We appreciate that. Okay, any other hands? Any other comments, questions before we go to public comment? Okay, Catherine, would you please take us to public comment on this item?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If any members of the public would like to address the governing board on this item, please raise your hand now in Zoom, either by clicking on raise hand at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 if you have called in. And we do have a hand raised. Steve Teixeira.
Thank you, Catherine. Again, hello, Chairman Bruce and members of the governing board. Steve Teixeira on behalf of Tahoe Chamber. Consistent with our prior comments on related items, so we encourage the board to take the action before you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Catherine, if there's any further public comment, please let me know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay. See, we will close public comment, and I will go back to the board. Is there any other question or comment before we entertain a motion? If not, I'm happy to entertain a motion at this time.
So, Chair, I will move to approve the required findings as described in Attachment D, and a finding of no significant effect as provided in Attachment B for adoption of the Bijou Al Tahoe Community Plan amendments as provided in the packet.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion with respect to that motion? Is there any, Joanne, just so I'm clear, are we talking about the recreation center buildings only, or are we talking about something beyond that?
Mr. Chair, this is John Marshall. It's yep. Just as recommended by RPIC. It would okay. Be just for the two buildings.
Okay, just wanted to clarify that. Very good. At this point in time, Mario, will you please take the roll?
Ms. Alden?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
I hope I come through. Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Bass?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Rice?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes. Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Williamson?
Yes. Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you. We have a second motion. Would anybody like to make that motion?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make a motion to adopt Ordinance 2022-blank, amending Ordinance Number 2020-04 as previously amended to amend the Bijou Al Tahoe Community Plan as shown in Attachment E, Exhibit 1.
Excellent. We have a motion. Any questions, comments on that motion? Seeing none, Mari, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Bass?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you so much, Maria. At this point in time, I'd like to suggest that we take a 15-minute break. We have an appeal coming up. 15 minutes allow us to stretch out a little bit and have a bite. And we will resume in 15 minutes. Is everybody okay with that? Any objection to that? Okay, that's what we'll do. Thank you. Okay, so we are moving towards item 8 here, but before we get there, I understand that there are a couple of conflict-related issues on this item. And so at this point in time, what I'd like to do is I'd like to identify mine and then ask anybody else who has a potential conflict to identify theirs. And I'll start off. So I actually represent a property owner that has cell towers and leases those cell towers. And one of the providers is Verizon. And because of that, I feel like I have a conflict here and that I need to recuse myself with respect to this matter. And so for purposes of the remainder of this item, I will be handing it off the chairmanship of the TRPA meeting to Cindy, and she will be chairing until we get through all the way through item 8. So Cindy, thank you very much for doing so. I will sign off. I understand that there are a couple other folks that have want to disclose conflict-related matters, and so we will do that now, and I will see you all at the end on the other side of item 8. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark. And then
Cindy.
Yes.
This is Bill Yates. Because of significant economic investments in the family trust that I'm the trustee of, I also am going to have to recuse myself from this matter. And since it's the last item of the day, I may very well just sign off at this point. That'll be all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that. Are there any others that would like to address any potential conflict issues on this item? I'm not seeing hands or in the chat. Okay. There is on page, if you look at page 418 of our packet, an assertion that I might have a conflict because of being involved with the Tahoe Prosperity Center board. I am no longer on that board, but even if I were, I don't, on advice of counsel, I do not believe that I have a conflict on this item, and so I will continue to chair this item. I just wanted to make that announcement as well.
And Cindy, I will state the same thing. I am still on the Tahoe Prosperity Center, although I haven't been at meetings for a long time. But I don't believe, and at the advice of our council, I do not believe there is a conflict. So I will be staying in. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I'm also on the Tahoe Prosperity Center board, and so do not have a conflict.
Thank you. I appreciate that all for clarifying the record. And so with that.
Wes Rice here. I'm also on the Prosperity. I think we all are, but I have no conflict.
Okay. Any others? Okay, with that then, this brings us to agenda item 8A. This is our closed session with our legal counsel to discuss existing and potential litigation. So after a motion to move to closed session, board members will leave this webinar and join the GoToMeeting sent to them last week and again this morning by our staff. Members of the public and non-board members will stay here on Zoom. The meeting will resume at agenda item 8B. So with that, may I have a motion to move to closed session?
So moved.
Thank you, Shelley. And then do we need to do a roll call on this? John?
Yes, let's go ahead and do a roll call.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steph.
Ms. Aldine?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski? I'll circle back, Mrs. Sagaski. Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Bass?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Okay. Mrs. Sagaski? Madam Chair, that motion will pass.
Great, thank you. So now the board members, please go to the sign off of this Zoom and go to the GoToMeeting, and we'll see you back. The public will be back to you in a little bit. Thank you. Okay. If we are back from closed session, and Greg, before you make your point, the board is going to take just a little over a 15-minute break here and reconvene at 1:15 so that everybody can get a bite to eat and get prepared for our process this afternoon. I will look to our legal counsel to discuss with Greg his point of order. Perhaps you can take that offline or when we come back at 1:15. So with that, we are going to take a 15 or a little over a 15-minute break. We'll reconvene at 1:15. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. It's 1:15, and we are reconvening from our short break. Thanks for your patience. Catherine, do we have everybody back from the board? Again, my apologies. I can't see.
Madam Chair, it looks like everyone is back.
Okay, great. So we're now back in open session, and we're going to move to agenda item 8B. Before we do that, I wanted to make sure it was clear for the record that Mr. Cody Bass is sitting in as the alternate for the City of South Lake Tahoe today. As their official representative today, I guess there's been some questions and wanted to address that issue. And then I wanted to turn this item over on the point of order discussion request we heard just before the break. So I'll turn it over to John Marshall to address that issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Greg Lean will be addressing those points during the context of his comments. We agreed to provide him with an extra minute. That was all he needed to take to make those comments. They were really comments rather than things that need to be dealt with outside of the normal comment process.
Okay. Well, thank you, John.
I do want to confirm just for the record that we're coming out of closed session. That closed session was limited only to board members and staff.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. So as I mentioned, we're now back in open session on agenda item 8B. This is an appeal of hearings officer issued special use permit for a Verizon wireless monopine at 1360 Ski Run Boulevard, South Lake Tahoe, California, assessor's parcel number APN 025-580-007, project file number ERSP 2019-0389, appeal file number admin 2021-0034. Information on this item can be found on page 305 of our packet. And as a reminder to the public, after the staff presentation and board discussion, you may raise your hand in the Zoom webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. And I do believe we have three presentations. Staff, I think John will cover that now as I turn this over to John Marshall.
Thank you, Cindy. Yes, there'll be three presentations. I will make a relatively concise presentation on the issues raised by both the opponents, the appellants to the cell tower, and by Verizon as the permittee. I just want to first start with a reminder that, what we're here for or here on is an appeal of a permit that was issued by the hearings officer. We're not here on a new application, but the issue is whether or not should the board modify, revoke, or leave in place the permit that the hearing officer was issued. Can we have the first slide, please? This is a quick orientation. The proposed facility we're talking about is located just about at the intersection of Ski Run Boulevard and Needle Peak Road in the city of South Lake Tahoe. And it is located more on the Needle Peak Road's side to the west of Ski Run Boulevard, southwest of Ski Run Boulevard. Next slide, please. This is a simulation provided by Verizon of the cell tower looking from looking west-southwest from Needle Peak across Ski Run Boulevard, and it is a camouflaged monopine. Next slide, please. This is a quick chronology. The City of South Lake Tahoe approved the Verizon cell tower permit for this in 2019. In 2020, the appellants filed litigation against TRPA and Verizon, alleging a significant number of claims of relief. Currently, that litigation is pending, waiting the district court's consideration of TRPA and Verizon's and other parties' motion to dismiss. TRPA's application, or the cell tower company's application to TRPA, was heard by the hearings officer on October 14th of last year. And the same day, the hearings officer granted the application, and TRPA issued the permit that is part of your packet. On November 2nd, the appellants filed their appeal with TRPA. The parties have filed their respective statements of appeals, replies, and responses, which have been provided to the governing board members as part of the packet. Now, can we go back to the first slide, please, just as the I'm going to just talk for a little bit about general matters and thought this might be a better slide than the chronology. Really, the major issues are threefold. The environmental analysis, the adequacy of the environmental analysis, whether or not, and that kind of includes whether or not we should be looking at RF emissions, et cetera. And then there was a question regarding scenic impacts and coverage. You know, we have addressed various tangential items in the staff report, and will not be addressing them unless you want, unless there's some specific question about it. The lead staff person on this case is Bridget Cornell with Current Planning, and she is available to answer any questions of a more technical nature that you might have. I really want to touch on 3 points regarding the adequacy of the environmental document, the initial environmental checklist. First, as we address in the staff report, the scope of the IEC was appropriate to look at this particular facility. There is no TRPA plan other than the regional plan that is being implemented here. And so there, even though there's been allegations of some sort of plan by TPC, Tahoe Prosperity Center, there is no greater master plan. And so the appropriate scope of the environmental document was the impacts associated with this proposed facility. Now the scenic considerations, as you've seen in your packet, the facility is proposed to be camouflaged and blended in with the surrounding scenery with faux branches and needles. This makes the tower, the monopine, blend in. but it also raises an issue regarding PVC needle shedding that was raised by the parties. This was not raised in front of the hearings officer, so there's no record of any objection at that point made by the opponents to the cell tower of the shedding issue. Nevertheless, there is plaintiffs raise a concern regarding, or the appellants raise a concern regarding whether or not needle shedding from the cell towers create an impact to the lake and to waters of the basin. Staff asked Verizon to respond to this, and they provided with their expert report. The expert report concluded that there'd be an unlikely impact, primarily because, one, these needles are PVC and do not degrade to the type of microplastics that are of concern in the lake, and two, that there's, particularly with a cell site as removed from the lake as this one, there is little opportunity for migration into waters and then into the lake. TRPA then took that report. I'm sorry, was there a question? Okay. TRPA then took that report and provided it to Dr. Monica Arienzo, I hope I got that name right, who's been doing the work on microplastics in Lake Tahoe from DRI, and her conclusion was the report was reasonable. Notwithstanding that, TRPA and Verizon negotiated a permit condition, additional permit condition, which is part of your packet, to specifically address the needle shedding issues. It requires two things. First, that best available technology must be used to ensure that shedding is minimal and is, so to attack the source of any plastic debris. Second, that Verizon inspect at least twice a year and clean up and dispose of all visible material. TRPA itself will do, as is routine with a number of projects, inspection post-construction to ensure that upkeep of the needle dispersal is taken care of. So from staff's perspective, the governing board can make the necessary environmental findings that are provided to you and approve the modification. Just a couple other quick items as set forth in the staff report. Impacts associated with RF emissions were left to to FCC and Verizon's compliance with those federal standards. In contrast to things like the PVC needle shedding, which are within our bailiwick and we've addressed. And lastly, the coverage issue, I think, is relatively straightforward. There is sufficient coverage on the site to account for the footprint of the facilities. The site is overcovered, and so we'll have to pay an excess coverage mitigation fee. And then when we come back around to the votes, I'll talk a little bit about how we get to the various voting patterns for the motion. But with that, we'll can turn it over to the appellants, and I believe Greg Lean will start.
Yes, thank you, John, and good afternoon, honorable members of the board. My name is Greg Lean. I do represent the appellant along with my legal team. I only want to raise at this juncture a fairly narrow issue. As you went into your 1 hour and 10 minute closed session, there were comments about discussing conflicts, and I do want to put on the record that while I think we can all agree we want to avoid any appearance of impropriety. It is impossible for us not to notice the incestuous relationship between the Tahoe Prosperity Center, which is openly a lobbying arm for the telecoms. It is funded directly and indirectly by the telecoms. And we believe that to be a violation of Article 3A5 of your compact, which forbids any economic interest, either on board members or the staff. And presumably some of you receive some form of benefit. It doesn't have to be a paycheck. Again, I think the overarching thing, and again, I mean, no disrespect to any of you, I have high respect for all of you, but you can get yourself in trouble in this regard. And I think we're going to strongly assert that in our litigation. We're not keeping that a secret. Joanne Marquette, although not mentioned so far as the executive director, is not only on the TPC board, but she's a member of the executive committee. This raises the question of whether even the staff as a whole may be conflicted. So we want to assert in the strongest possible terms that it does appear that the involvement of the Tahoe Prosperity Center creates a serious problem. And I will stop there, having made that record. And I want to turn it over to my co-presenter, David Jenkins, who will start our more formal presentation. Thank you for your time.
Honorable Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, David. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, honorable members of the governing board of TRPA, my name is David Jenkins. I do support safe technology enhancements. I come to you this morning to ask the board to seriously consider the evidence that has been and will be provided to you. This evidence will demonstrate that the proposed monopine on Needle Peak and Ski Run Boulevard should be denied, or said another way, appeal upheld, because of the documented harm it will do the environment, water quality in Lake Tahoe, and to the people who live here. I am the retired city manager of South Lake Tahoe, where I served for 8 years. I live here full-time, and I want to be certain that our lake and our environment is protected. In my 35-plus years as a city manager in California, I have never seen a project like this one handled with this lack of diligence and fidelity to the preservation of our environment than this matter has been handled. The evidence of environmental damage is clear. Please, please review it. For the record, I am not a litigant in this matter. I have no pecuniary interest in the outcome. I am a volunteer and concerned resident and former public official who wants to see the right thing done. And I am hopeful that the TRPA board also wants to fulfill its mission to protect Lake Tahoe. This is a very serious threat to the lake and TRPA's mission. Approval of the monopine cell tower sets the precedent for all existing and proposed cell towers that big telecom corporations can do environmental damage without objection in Lake Tahoe. The governing board must not allow this to happen. Presenters to follow me will explain the issue in the limited time that we have available. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Robert Berg, one of the attorneys for appellants. Because our time is so limited, I will focus on two game-stopping points which require you to vote in favor of our appeal. First, as a threshold matter, TRPA lacks jurisdiction to issue the permit because Verizon has allowed the underlying South Lake Tahoe City special use permit for the construction and operation of the proposed monopine cell tower to lapse. Without a current special use permit from the City of South Lake Tahoe for this tower in place, TRPA cannot issue its own permit. The special use permit issued by the City of South Lake Tahoe was provided for a one-year period only, expiring at the end of that period if not, quote, utilized, end quote. It was a use-it-or-lose-it permit. Verizon did nothing at all to advance this project for over 1 year after receiving the special use permit from the City of Lake Tahoe, and by its express terms, the special use permit has lapsed. On March 22nd, 2019, Verizon filed a general planning application for a major design review and a special use permit with the City of South Lake Tahoe Planning Division to erect the 112-foot tall monopine cell tower at 1360 Ski Run Boulevard. After public hearings on June 25, 2019, the City of South Lake Tahoe issued the special use permit. The special use permit included as a general condition, condition three, which states the following. This special use permit shall expire and become null and void 1 year after the date of granting, unless such issuance is utilized prior to the date of expiration. On June 27, 2019, Ms. Eisenstecken filed an appeal of the decision approving that special use permit. On January 14, 2020, the South Lake Tahoe City Council conducted its hearing on Ms. Eisenstecken's appeal. The City Council voted 3-2 to deny the appeal and to uphold the special use permit. Consequently, the City Council issued the special use permit to Verizon for the tower on January 14, 2020. Thus, under condition three of that permit, Verizon had to use the permit by January 14, 2021, or else the permit by its terms would automatically expire. Under California law, land use and zoning statutes often provide that variances and or permits automatically expire at 1 year unless used during that 1 year period. The purpose of the 1 year automatic expiration is to prevent reserving the use of land for future purposes when one has no present intention to commence upon the permitted use. Although a permittee need not comply with every condition in the use permit in order to avoid expiration of the permit after 1 year, the permittee must take some affirmative good faith action in employing the permit within that 1 year period. This is black letter law in California, perhaps best articulated in the California Court of Appeals decision in Upton versus Gray, which we discuss in our papers. The only thing Verizon did within the 1 year period following the issuance of the city's special use permit is to transmit a copy of that permit to TRPA. The mere transmission of a copy of a permit does not meet the legal test in California for utilizing a permit for the purpose of avoiding its expiration under Upton versus Gray. Otherwise, a special use permit holder can reserve the use of land intended for a specific purpose almost indefinitely without having to diligently pursue all the steps necessary to complete the project. That's exactly the sin Verizon has committed here. Verizon's failure to use the permit during the 1 year period following its issuance means the permit has expired and it is a nullity. The TRPA public record shows no activity at all by Verizon to move forward with its proposed tower within that 1 year period. Verizon should have moved forward with its application during the period ending January 14th, 2021, but it did nothing. It only began pursuing steps to complete its TRP application several months after the January 14, 2021 expiration date. And because Verizon failed to utilize its variance during the 1 year period, the city's special use permit has been rendered null and void. Without that city permit in place, TRPA cannot issue its permit for the project. The appeal must be granted on this basis alone. Second, we have demonstrated that Verizon's monopine tower, if built, will illegally discharge literally millions of toxic PVC faux pine needles from the cell tower at heights of between 30 to 112 feet above ground level across a broad debris field below, as these pine needle PVC fragments are stripped from the tower during the fierce windstorms and snowstorms that buffet the base of Heavenly Valley every year. As our video that we submit in our paper shows, these pine needles made of PVC severely degrade in the extreme temperatures and strong UV exposures of the Tahoe Basin. The fallen pine needles become brittle and fragment easily into tiny bits. These PVC pine needles and fragments will inevitably wind up in either nearby Bijou Park Creek and the SEZ, which is just a few feet from the proposed tower site, or else in the Ski Run Drive stormwater system. Ski Run Drive is adjacent to the tower site on the other side. In both cases, these PVC fragments will be transported into Lake Tahoe, exacerbating the microplastics problem we already know the lake is suffering from. Critically, any and all of Verizon's PVC discharge from the monopine tower will be illegal under a host of federal, state, and TRPA laws. Verizon simply cannot discharge industrial quantities of PVC solid waste in an uncontrolled manner from a 112-foot-tall cell tower in the environmentally sensitive and protected Lake Tahoe Basin. Yet TRP staff, in complete derogation of their duties to protect Lake Tahoe and its environs from pollution, are urging you to deny your appeal and to allow Verizon to build another microplastic time bomb that will disperse tons of microplastic wastes into stormwater catchments and waterways and then into nearby Lake Tahoe. You have been appointed as governors on this important board to protect the lake, and we need you to do so. We have provided a 4.5-minute long video that Robert Aaron, a Lake Tahoe resident, took in November of 2021 at the site of a new singular wireless, it's an AT&T monopine cell tower. It's located at 1857 Hecba Drive next to Pioneer Drive and Washoen Boulevard. We urge you to look at that full video. We prepared a shorter excerpt that I'd like to show you now. It's a little over a minute long. I'm going to share my screen. Let's see if this works. What is going on here? Could I share the screen, please? Hello? Anyone there?
We are here. Staff is Catherine.
You have permission to share your screen. I will stop sharing my screen.
Okay. The desktop item is where my... If the desktop one could remove the item. Let me see what's going on here now. Oh, let me try this. Okay. Can you see that?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'm going to run this. So this was taken at the 1857. I'm going to turn the volume down. This is taken at the AT&T Tower at 1857 Hecba. And you can see they're picking up PVC sprigs and needles from the base of that tower. This is November 4th, 2021. You can see how these are everywhere you look at the base of the tower. They're very small. You can see those are made out of PVC. They're very brittle. Mr. Aaron will show in a minute or so how these things can break apart. They blend in into the ground cover. They're in tiny fragments. Those are all PVC pieces. The idea that these things are not going to wind up blowing in the wind, you have 50, 60 mile an hour winds during storms. You have the Zephyr in the summer going by, the Washoe Zephyr blowing at 30 miles an hour every day. These things are going to fall from 100 feet up in the air, and they're going to be dispersed by the wind over a very broad area. They're not going to just drop straight down to the bottom. The idea that Verizon can come out twice a year and pick up all these pieces from the base of the tower and prevent this from being dispersed over a broad area is just completely and utterly ludicrous. This is a massive amount of pollution. You can see just vast quantities. This happens at every single monopine tower in the area. Here's a giant amount at the base of the tower of these things that fly everywhere. And you can see how brittle. They just fall right apart. So if you look at Verizon's purported expert report, they say this stuff is very durable and is not likely to degrade or become brittle. It's just complete and utter nonsense. This is all made out of PVC. There are just pounds and pounds of this material. I'm going to stop sharing now. I urge you to look at the full four-minute video, which shows this in greater depth. And the Hecba Drive site is much more protected than the site up on the flank of Heavenly Valley where this proposed Verizon Tower is going to be located. There's extreme exposure to winds, heavy UV exposure there, extreme temperature variations, heavy snow and ice burdens. So the idea that this stuff is not going to fall down off the trees is complete and utter nonsense. You're going to have pounds and pounds of this pollutant material, PVC material, which is toxic, just falling all over the place over a wide debris field. Now, the Verizon site, the proposed Verizon site, is just a few feet from an SEZ, And it's even Verizon says it's 300 feet from the Bijou Creek drainage basin. It's also very close to the Ski Run Drive. So it's going to enter into the stormwater system down there and get transported, eventually winding up in the lake a mile away. In my letter that I submitted yesterday, I cite to a number of different studies showing how this PVC material is particularly toxic when it breaks down in the freshwater environment. There is reams of studies showing that PVC broken down is toxic to fish, to algae, to plant material, and ultimately gets into the food chain and can get into human beings. So this is very toxic, dangerous material. Now, one thing Verizon doesn't tell you at all is how much of this stuff is going to be on the tree. You saw that photo simulation that John showed you at the beginning of his presentation of this plush monopine. We called up some representatives in the industry, a 4-foot long branch of monopine with the PVC pine needles weighs about 20 to 25 pounds. So if you look back at that photo simulation photo, there are hundreds and hundreds of these branches extending, some of them are 12 feet long. You've got literally thousands of pounds of PVC material on these monopines and made out of millions and millions of pine needles that are gonna break and degrade and fall from the tree, get carried away, and wind up ultimately in the lake. And this, there's no ability at all for Verizon coming out twice a year to clean this stuff up. It's really an environmental catastrophe. And in reality, you should, if you are responsible stewards of the lake, you really should issue a moratorium on any monopines, because this is happening at every monopine in the Tahoe Basin. This is an extraordinary discovery we made in November for the first time, and it's something that you must take seriously. I don't see how you can possibly allow this particular monopine to go in without doing a full environmental analysis of this potential problem. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Alan Miller, professional civil and environmental engineer.
Alan, you have about 4.5 minutes left.
Okay. I'm Alan Miller, professional civil and environmental engineer. I worked for 25 years as a water resource control engineer for the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Manhattan Region, and as a chief supervisor over various regulatory units for 18 years here at Lake Tahoe. My expertise in water quality, law, and regulations under the Clean Water Act. If you uphold the appeal, you'll only be disapproving a waste discharge that is prohibited and illegal. The plastic and other uncontrolled waste from the monopine tower. The prior TRPA documentation and condition 11 don't evaluate the methods of waste control and off-site impacts from wind and water carried plastic debris. Such uncontrolled waste discharges to lands and waters on or off the project site are expressly prohibited in the Lake Tahoe watershed under the California Water Code and regulations established thereunder. TRPA must uphold the strictest standards. There are no exemptions allowed. Due to the location of the project site near other public and private lands and waterways, Verizon cannot trespass and intrude itself upon their domains for industrial solid waste collection efforts. Therefore, the windborne and waterborne waste will not reasonably be subject to collection. Condition 11 is untenable on its face, and TRPA's staff's limited scope of review is insupportable. The appeal must be granted. I would now like to speak as an engineer on the increased fire risk associated with wireless towers of all types, but especially huge monopine macro towers with large wind profiles due to the branches and needles. Wildland fire risk is increasing, as are the number of towers and tower fires, including Verizon towers. Due to wind, electrical malfunctions, welding activities, wildlife interactions, pole overloading, and a variety of other factors, as news reports show. Contrary to the staff report, tower fires are not the same as other structure fires, but may carry extra risks due to being energized, remoteness and inaccessibility, difficulties with extinguishing, and effects on other structures and trees within the tower fall radius. Higher engineering standards and safety factors should be applied in recognition of the extraordinary Tahoe values and investments at risk. The TRPA is setting the stage to burn this basin to a cinder in quietly promoting the Tahoe Wireless Plan of the Tahoe Prosperity Center, often under the guise of advancing public safety. The TPC's latest publication, the Envision Tahoe Community Report, was in the news recently, citing wildfires and smoke as among the biggest threats to the lakewide community and the most extensive current pole of its kind. In ignoring the increased fire threats associated with wireless facilities, such as this tower, the TRPA is clearly out of step with its own public, out of step with its own recommendations and regulations, promoting against all science, logic, and reason the staff's approval of this project. Uphold the appeal. Thank you.
Is that the conclusion then of your presentation from the appellants?
Yeah, I would like to very, very quickly go through my presentation. Hopefully I can get it in 2.5 minutes. So I'm Julian Gresser. I appear today as counsel, co-counsel on behalf of Tahoe Stewards Environmental Trust, Tahoe for Safer Tech, and Monica Eisensecken and David Benedict. And I appreciate the opportunity to make these simple comments. Today, you will determine irrevocably the fate of Lake Tahoe and this region. Our legal team, which you've already met, have already established a substantial evidentiary record on the environmental perils, the dangers to public health, and violations of federal law, compact law, and California state law of the proposed Verizon Macro Tower. I only want to make 4 crucial points. First, Congress's core mission in establishing by the Interstate Compact at Public Trust was to preserve the environmental quality of Lake Tahoe. Article 5D of the Compact states, the regional plan shall provide for attaining and maintaining federal, state, or local air water quality standards, whichever are strictest in the respective portions of the region for which the standards are applicable. The agency may, however, adopt air or water quality standards or control measures more stringent than the applicable state implementation plan or the applicable federal, state, or local standards for the region if it finds that such additional standards or control measures are necessary to achieve the purposes of this compact. The applicable standard continuously applied by the California Regional Quality Control Board, Ohotan Region, LFB, is zero discharge. The monopines proposed by the Verizon Macro Tower will in themselves deliver tons of hazardous waste directly and by runoff into Lake Tahoe in violation of the zero discharge standard. Second, before you is not a simple individual decision by the board on a specific site application by Verizon. It may appear so, but please don't be deceived. Since all monopine situations are virtually identical, as Bob Berg has pointed out, you are being asked to make a fundamental policy decision that will be cited and applied in every other monopine application throughout Lake Tahoe. But as we have pointed out, no one, neither the TRPA staff, TRP's counsel, or Verizon for that matter, has adequate information on the specific contents of the toxic brew you're being asked to permit to be discharged into the lake. And certainly there's no scientific evidence that the biannual cleanup to mitigate the situation proposed by Verizon, Condition 11, will be environmentally sufficient to justify Verizon circumventing the zero discharge standard. Third, the proposed Wireless Connect Tahoe plan, contrary to what the staff report alleges, is clearly a public, not mere private project of the wireless industry lobbying on the Tahoe Prosperity Center. The staff report plainly and erroneously states, quote, the TPC's Connect Tahoe is a private nonprofit's effort. The TPC's effort is not a plan of TRPA or any other government agency, and therefore is not the subject of any decision before the agency. But the TRPA board, you yourself, have just admitted in open session today that many of you are actively serving as members or advisors to the TPC. Wireless Connect Tahoe is clearly a public-private joint venture partnership and therefore subject to the principles, strictures, and regulations pursuant to Article 7, the regional plan, and other federal and state laws. Lastly, there is an alternative, wise, and balanced path forward. That is to pause for 90 days, gather the best available scientific studies expert opinions, assess, then decide. What value is gained by rushing through so momentous a decision? The cost to all parties, even Verizon, of an environmental catastrophe, including the elevated fire risks of monopines, are grave. The benefits to the Tahoe community and the TRPA itself of establishing a precedent of forbearance and heightened vigilance on a critical decision are immediate and great. The inconvenience of a 90-day pause, minimal. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
I think you wrap up, don't you, Greg?
Yeah. Do we have any time left, Cindy?
No, you don't. You've had 24 minutes of your presentation. Greg, this is John Marshall.
Yeah, all right.
And you were limited to 20, and that's with the extra minute.
All right. Well, I have no point in asking whether we've got time in rebuttal then. We'll conclude there and refer you to my written remarks on the voting issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. And with that, then we're going to move on to Verizon Wireless representative. I don't have a name on that.
Paul Albritton, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Paul. Thank you.
And we have a panel that will be speaking. And I would hope that I would ask that we could light up the panel. And that's Charlie Schwartz, Christina Martinez, Don Carmichael, and Bill Hammett. And Melanie Sengupta has started. Shall we begin?
Yes, we're all set. Thanks, Paul.
But are you okay for starting time? I have one preliminary point of order myself. I had the opportunity and pleasure to meet Cody Bass after the South Lake Tahoe meeting, where the city council voted to approve this facility. Cody did not vote in favor of this project. And so I just as a, for the record, note the potential for bias, have every confidence in his integrity. Good morning. My name is Paul Albritton. I'm outside counsel for Verizon Wireless. We have a great panel to describe the time and effort and expert diligence that went into the location of this facility. Speaking first will be Charlie Schwartz. He's our RF engineering manager. He's from the South Lake Tahoe area, and he'll tell you about the dire need for this facility in the South Lake Tahoe area. Speaking second will be Crystal Montanez. She is from SAC Wireless, and she was involved in the location, siting, alternatives analysis, and design of the facility. Speaking third will be Don Carmichael. He is our expert on photo simulations using drone technology, and he will describe to you the accuracy of our photo simulations for your aesthetic review. And speaking last will be Bill Hammett of Hammett and Edison Consulting Engineers, who wrote the book on compliance with FCC wireless exposures. I'll conclude with some comments on the appeal itself, but let's get started. Charlie?
All right, good afternoon. I'm Charlie Schwartz. I'm the RF Design Engineering Manager for the Tahoe Basin. I have 25 plus years experience in telecommunication network design, and I take care of Northern California and Northern Nevada markets. Also, I've been personally involved in the network improvements for the Tahoe Basin for the last 8 years. From a network point of view, the Tahoe Basin is a very large challenge to us due to the terrain, the mountains, dense pine trees, and a very large number of people that visit the area on any given day. I will be showing you engineering data to support our highly needed Ski Run Boulevard site. We submitted our significant gap to the City of South Lake Tahoe in June 2018, and that significant gap still exists today. Significant gap is very important to network performance. It represents an area in the network that has no coverage, inadequate coverage, or is highly congested on capacity. We have a finite number of resources available at each site, and the network needs to be robust enough to handle up to 300,000 people that may visit the South Shore on any given weekend. As a resident of the South Shore, I've personally experienced network congestion here. A phone may work just fine on Tuesday afternoon, but may not work well during the weekend or at times of high usage. We use a proprietary state-of-the-art tools to analyze our network and provide propagation models for our coverage. Our models are scientifically based to accurately reflect our coverage and network performance, and we use empirical data to audit our tools to maintain a high level of accuracy. Chart one. This chart shows live data, empirical data from our switch for the South Lake Tahoe area that was previously submitted to the TRPA hearing officer. This area covers from state line to Myers. This is daily megabyte volume over 26 months, and you can see how the demand peaks and valleys from day to day, but shows a consistent increase in usage. As the chart shows, we have consistent high peaks on the 4th of July, Labor Day, and New Year's holidays. It is our job to make sure that the network works at all times, during the average periods and during the high demand periods. Over 2 years, we've seen a growth of 137%, which is more than double, and demand triples every 36 months, which is considerably higher than the national average. Same empirical data, the same area with a different view. It shows the monthly demand month over month and year over year. And as noted, you can see the 2 year growth for the May, June, and July months. Slide. This is a map of the area where the proposed Ski Run Boulevard is planned. The map on the left is existing coverage. The map on the right is same coverage with Ski Run Boulevard site added. See our Tahoe PD site to the west. You can see Harris and Harvey's to the northeast and Angels Roost to the southeast. Ski Run site location is currently served by our Harris Casino, which is about 1.5 miles away and is showing signs of capacity limitations. Green areas on the map represent indoor coverage or in-home coverage, and this shows where expected coverage is available inside your home, if you're working from home, or if your children are doing homework. The yellow area represents in-vehicle coverage. This shows where expected coverage is available inside your car, and the gray areas represent the outdoor coverage, and this shows where expected coverage is available to you as you walk down the sidewalk. Looking at these two maps, you can clearly see where the significant gap is. It's the gray and yellow areas to the east and west of the proposed Ski Run Boulevard site, and how that site will resolve those gaps. Yep. This map shows the same area without Ski Run, but with our future Tahoe season site, which is another planned site in the area. The Tahoe season site does not solve the significant gap. Slide. This map shows the same area with both Ski Run Boulevard and Tahoe seasons active. See how these two sites complement each other and resolve different significant gaps in the network. I'd like to close with that we invest a lot of time analyzing a vast amount of objective engineering data to make sure we have the right structure at the right location to provide the needed network performance and limit the number of structures in any given area. With that, I'll hand off to Crystal from SAC Wireless.
Good morning. My name is Crystal Montanez, and I'm a program manager for SAC Wireless on behalf of Verizon Wireless. I will go over the timeline, alternatives, and site design of the proposed Verizon facility. Next slide. On this slide is a detailed five-year timeline that SAC and Verizon have worked to obtain approval for the proposed cell site at Ski Run Boulevard. For over 4 years, the City of South Lake Tahoe and TARPA have thoroughly reviewed the site, including requiring the examination of 38 alternative locations. The site has already been approved by South Lake Tahoe Planning. This will be the fourth public hearing for this site to obtain approval to build a site at this location. And lastly, this project is currently in building permit review with the City of South Lake Tahoe. Next slide, please. Verizon has considered 38 alternative sites for this proposed project and have come to the conclusion, along with both the City of South Lake Tahoe and TARPA, that the current proposed location is the best option to meet Verizon's service objectives and will have the least visual and environmental impact to the area. The other alternatives were discounted due to being outside the service gap area, the location being too close to existing or proposed facilities, locations with non-responsive and unwilling landlords, such as the fire department, constructability and access issues, land coverage issues, which were insufficient amount of land credits required to site the cell tower on the property, increased visual and environmental impact, where some of the candidates would have more of a visual impact to the area due to minimal tree coverage or more visible line of sight to the public right away. Next slide. I believe this was shown earlier, but we will show this once again. This slide shows the location of the proposed facility in relation to Lake Tahoe, which is more than 1 mile away from the proposed facility, as well as showing the location along Ski Run Boulevard and Needle Peak Road. Next slide. The proposed design for this site is a 112-foot monopine. The branches will extend beyond the antennas to conceal them within the monopine. Verizon's antenna center line will be 103 feet. Potential co-locators could then go at an antenna center line of 90 feet. The equipment will be concealed within a small shed next to the tower. The tower will be set back 20 feet from Neal Peak Road within a grove of trees. Next slide. And with that, I will hand off to Don Carmichael with Previsuals, Inc. to discuss the photosynthesis.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Don Carmichael. I'm a licensed landscape architect specifically trained for visual analysis and simulations, and have been doing this for 29 years on a wide range of projects, including but not limited to telecommunication sites. I was called in for this project because of my expertise in creating very accurate photo simulations. I'm also a commercial drone pilot licensed by the FAA. Having a drone in our list of tools to establish scale and placement gives us a level of accuracy unparalleled in previous decades. We can place a drone exactly where the top branch of a monopine is proposed, lock it into place, and even with a light breeze, it'll remain fixed in place until the battery runs out. Each time we take a photograph of the drone, the controller is checked to confirm there has been no movement. We can see in this image of the controller screen that the drone is fixed exactly above the base of the proposed monopine, and it remains at 112 feet above the ground, circled in red on the bottom of the screen. The other extremely valuable benefit of the drone is being able to view live video feed from the height of the proposed tower. As we rotate around and view a full panorama of the surrounding area, we can identify any spots from which we might be able to see the top of the monopine. We're looking for roads, trails, homes, parks, anywhere that we can see it from the drone, would be a spot from which we can take a photograph back toward the drone. In this image, we see a segment of Needle Peak Road highlighted in a blue circle where I stood to take a photograph for a photo simulation. Here is that photograph taken from that spot on Needle Peak Road showing the drone in the red circle. And this is the photo simulation. This allows us to provide an extremely accurate depiction of what the monopine would look like, having the exact scale and placement. And again, this is from Ski Run Boulevard, just uphill from Needle Peak Road. And again, here's the monopine. The digital image of the monopine is an actual site that was built by Verizon, photographed using the same camera and lens and merged with the base image in Photoshop. So here's the drone as seen from Needle Peak Road looking towards Ski Run. And again, with the monopine. Of course, we need to show what the view would look like from some other key landmarks. This is the Heavenly Ski area along Keller Road. Because we can't see the drone from here, we use other extremely accurate methodology, including Google Earth and 3D modeling to identify the exact scale and placement. From here, the monopine will not be visible as indicated. And again, from farther up Needle Peak Road, the site will not be visible at all. In summary, I studied every location that had a possibility of seeing the monopine. Within a half mile radius of the project, the monopine will only be visible right around the base of the tower, around the intersection of Ski Run and Needle Peak. And these views are within 300 to 400 yards of the base of the tower. All the close-up views are dominated by foreground trees, so you're looking through trees to see the monopine. Any farther out than the 300 to 400 yards, the monopine gets lost in the forest. Now, views beyond the half mile away are relatively insignificant for two very important reasons. From no place does the monopine silhouette like a lone tree against the skyline. And secondly, at that distance, the branches completely blend into the forest. That concludes this quick summary of my findings regarding the visibility of the proposed monopine. I now turn this over to Bill Hammett.
Good afternoon, Chair Augustuson and board members. My name is Bill Hammett. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of California. I manage a firm of 18. We're located in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm a longtime landowner, homeowner in the South Lake Tahoe area. A regular part of our professional practice is the calculation and measurement of radio frequency exposure conditions. It's been my principal focus for 37 years. In that time, we've done more than 20,000 site evaluations. McGraw-Hill has published my book on this topic. As engineers, our job is really straightforward. What are the exposure levels and how do they compare to the standards? Since we deal just in facts, we work across the field doing consulting work for wireless carriers, for cities and counties, and for private landlords. My engineering study is a matter of record in this proceeding. We found that the proposed Verizon operation will comply with the FCC's environmental protection requirements. This is true even if there's a second carrier on the tower, as one of the earlier speakers indicated. And it's important to note that no one is arguing otherwise. This facility will comply with the FCC limits. I also want to point out that the term 5G is often misunderstood. It refers simply to the latest, greatest technique for encoding data onto radio waves. It's more efficient than 4G, which is more efficient than 3G, which is more efficient than 2G. And I fully expect that there will be a 6G and maybe a 7G coming along as coding methods are further optimized. The carriers all continue to provide a mix of these technologies, 3G, 4G, 5G, to serve the variety of cell phones and tablets of various ages that are available to subscribers. I'm happy to address any engineering questions or compliance questions should those arise following this presentation. And I will hand it back to, I believe, Paul Albritton for concluding remarks.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Crystal. Thank you, Charlie. They will all be available to answer your questions. I assume you can hear me?
Yes,
can anyone hear me? Yeah, okay, thank
you.
Yes,
we can.
I saw I was appropriately muted for a moment there. I'd like to quickly address, thank you all for your time today. We really value your experience and knowledge brought to this project. And that was to the board I was speaking. I want to address quickly some of the appeal issues that came up. First was somehow that this is a precedent that you are setting with respect to monopines in Lake Tahoe, and nothing could be further from the truth. As the appellant showed, they showed a 20-year-old AT&T tree built with older technology and evidently degrading after 20 years. But there are seven Verizon Wireless monopines and a dozen monopines in the Tahoe area that have been there for decades. And I'll address that later with respect to plastics, but it's not as though one tree leads to the next. As you know, each project is individual when it comes before you. With respect to the South Lake Tahoe permit, We consulted with the city of South Lake Tahoe. I personally consulted with the city of South Lake Tahoe in November of 2020 to confirm that the permit had been utilized. We received an email back from the city attorney. You'll see it on your screen right now, where they confirmed that by processing our application with TRPA, and at that time we were working with TRPA on a variety of issues, that we had utilized the permit for the purposes of South Lake Tahoe. They are the ones who govern their own code in terms of when permits are utilized or not utilized. That's not in TRPA's purview. And so the concept that somehow this permit cannot be pursued is absurd. And we're currently working with the city of South Lake Tahoe on the building permit. Moving on to the next issue, I have to speak about plastics. As you heard, we consulted with Integral Consulting, who provided a report that appears in your packet today. Integral Consulting confirmed that PVC is a heavy plastic, not subject to rapid degradation. It's heavy. It's also, for degradation, there needs to be some kind of activity, such as waves or other motion that breaks up the plastic. And in this case, Integral Consulting confirmed that this is really a static situation where pieces of the branches that fall do remain on the ground. And third, that there are no conduits for this material to get to the lake. We're 330 feet away from the creek. It's down gradient, but there are ground berms and other impediments to the travel of any kind of material like that. And again, we're over a mile away from the lake. And as we heard at the beginning of the talk, there was confirmation from TRPA's own consultant regarding these conclusions. The only evidence that the appellants have provided is a video of a 20-year-old AT&T tree. Your staff has proposed, and Verizon Wireless has accepted, a condition that says that we have to use all modern technologies to adhere the plastics to the tree itself, the PVC to the tree itself, and we will do that. There's also the removal of any debris every 6 months. And in addition to that, I have to point out that there is another condition where TRPA will be inspecting the area every 2 years. So you're going to have regular inspections, and I think an improved monitoring and maintenance of this tree over every other tree that potentially has come before you in Tahoe Basin. And perhaps in that regard, it sets a precedence for better environmental management going forward. I have to speak a moment about fire. Cell towers are not energized. They do not self-combust. In fact, the flash point for the plastics on this tree are much higher than the pine trees around it. It has a lightning rod. It is designed to sustain fire and wind. The diesel generator has a double wall belly tank and a containment pad to prevent any kind of leak of the diesel. And you'll see in the packet that we have letters from fire and police emergency response personnel who ask that you continue to approve wireless facilities in the Tahoe Basin because of the kinds of fires, the Caldor Fire and other fires that require emergency response. There were many other appeal issues raised by appellants. I think those are really the principal ones that they have raised today. I want to leave a few minutes for you to ask our panel of experts. As I mentioned, we've got questions about the network, questions about the design or alternatives, questions about the photo simulations or RF emissions generally or 5G. We're happy to answer any of those questions and truly appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul, and to the team, both for the appellants and the permittees. So with that, we would like to honor Greg and give you 2 minutes from the appellants to rebut anything you just heard before we go to questions from the board. So Greg, if you want to log back on.
Yeah, and let me get our team on board. First, I on behalf of the team, want to thank you for that additional 2 minutes in rebuttal. Bob, if I could return it back to you on the issue of the plastics, I think that's an important one, as well as Alan. I think one of the absolute key points here is really all of this stuff about the need for wireless is completely irrelevant. What's relevant is your standards under the compact. Under the compact, you have to enforce whatever standard on water quality is the most stringent. And you can't even threaten a discharge of plastic. So Bob and Ellen, if you could weigh in on this issue, I think it's an absolutely crucial one.
Let me make one point. Mr. Albright said the tower, the AT&T tower that we showed, was built 20 years ago. That's true, but it was redone in 2018. They replaced all the equipment on the tower. So we're really talking about 4 years worth of stuff, not 20 years of PVC. And you can see how that degraded so quickly and fell off the tower in piles and piles, many pounds. Verizon never has mentioned to you how much plastic material is going up there. It's literally thousands of pounds. They haven't provided you with the specifications, what this material is made out of, what plasticizers and other toxic materials are in the PVC that's going to degrade. It really is a toxic waste dump. Thank you.
Yeah, I would reiterate the same thing, and that it doesn't even really matter, even if it was inert waste. It's still not allowed. It's solid waste, and the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board's basin plan specifically prohibits the discharge of solid waste within the Lake Tahoe hydrologic unit. It's just that simple, and you're not even supposed to ask. It's like, you know, can I put a waste dump here? I spent my work life, cleaning up messes from stuff like this. People that didn't understand or didn't think it was going to be a problem. Soil contamination, water contamination, groundwater contamination, Lake Tahoe itself. So is the self-serving consultant's report on plastics is simply ridiculous.
Your 2 minutes are up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I thank our legal counsel team for allowing that rebuttal as well. So with that, I will open it up to board member questions of either the permittee or the appellants. Are there or of staff? Are there any questions that the governing board members have? Raise your hand or signal me.
Sure, I'll go ahead and kick it off. I've got quite
a
few questions.
Yes, Mr. Babb.
Thanks. So I have quite a few questions for Verizon and a few for staff. I'm curious, you know, the city passed an ordinance for large cell sites, and I'm curious if you have analyzed this current location against our current ordinance and if what you found, if it would be allowable. And also, have you looked within the current ordinance and found future locations for different towers that would fit within our current ordinance.
Paul here, I'll take a first stab at that. There is a new ordinance. It has a residential setback, which makes siting more difficult. But even with that, the 38 sites that we reviewed would continue to confirm that this is the least intrusive location for the placement of the of this particular facility to provide service to this particular area, based on the other facilities that are currently functioning and providing the network for Verizon Wireless. The network has like a system of sprinklers on a lawn. We set the facilities at a particular distance from each other so that there's a dominant signal that goes to the phone as it transfers from one cell to the next cell. And so we have specific coverage area requirements. And there is no other facility that would meet the old code or the current code with respect to those requirements, which in, where we've identified a gap and that this is the least intrusive means of filling that gap, even under your current code would provide for approval of that facility. And I think that answers, was there a second part of your question? I'm sorry.
Well, so, yeah,
oh, I mean, future facilities. We do have another facility coming up. The Tahoe Seasons facility is sited on the rooftop of the Tahoe Seasons Hotel. It's antennas inside of a, on the roof of the building, inside of shielding that hides the antennas and looks like other chimneys on the building. This is obviously our preferred design. We prefer to go on existing towers, co-locate, as we understand a co-locator will be coming onto this tower. And that's also, I think, fits within your code. We will have we have other facilities, obviously, in South Lake Tahoe. None that are coming, you know, in this area where we're going to be providing service with the Tahoe Seasons site, the Kokoni site, the PD, the.
Okay, so it's yeah, I got it. But so no, though, because of the residential setbacks, this would not be allowed. That the current monopine that we're proposing would not be allowed under the current ordinance is basically the fact because of the setbacks. Is that accurate?
Without an exception, so we would have an exception under the code. For that situation where there was no other opportunity that was not in that was outside of a setback for the facility.
Okay, and then so with the we've talked about the Seasons Resort, and I was actually I'm very familiar with that one, and I know that there's been a lot of deployment on Harvey's over the last since the 2019. The gap analysis that we were presented at City Council did not include either one of those sites as far as the, you know, the gap in the coverage in South Lake Tahoe. So right now, what was approved under TRPA is still that 2019 analysis without the expansion from Harvey's, as well as what is going to be installed at the Seasons Resort. Is that accurate?
No, it's not, actually. We submitted additional materials to TRPA. In fact, and Charlie Schwartz can speak to this and bring his maps back up again if you wish. We definitely were focused on Harrah's, and Harvey's was included in that. As we've added also, as you heard Charlie, he included the Tahoe Seasons facility, even though that's not on air yet. And so we have the information that was provided was absolutely up to date. As I was mentioning, the site, we have to provide dominant signal for a cell phone to work in the coverage area that we're trying to cover. The problem right now is that the Harrah's facility is overloaded. That was the information Charlie was showing to you, that it's been increasing in volume. And we have additional graphic we can pull up and show you in a few moments that the network is actually overtaxed at this point, even in the area of South Lake Tahoe, even with the existing facilities. And it's because we need to fill in that gap and split the cell, add capacity to the network in that area to address all of the demand that we are receiving. Melanie, I don't know if you can pull up the TTI map, and I don't know if Charlie, you want to pull up the coverage map we looked at earlier, but those facilities were all included in Charlie's analysis. So on this map here, this was in the materials that were provided to you, and I can let Charlie explain it, but this shows the transmission time overload of the network. Each red dot is an hour of service, and you can see that our network is peaking out maximum TTI on each line is a day. The blue graph below is the number of people who are trying to get on the network. You can see that increasing over time. And so in the last year, over nearly 450 hours during the year, our system was absolutely overloaded and unable to perform. And so this takes into account all of the facilities that are providing service in the South Lake Tahoe area. Charlie, I'll let you jump in to see if you have some additional comments or if you'd like to pull up your coverage map again.
This chart real quick. Just to clarify, this is the Harris facility. That's the primary server for where the Ski Run Boulevard site is. On the left of this chart is TTI occupancy, and that's the orange data you see on the chart. It can never go beyond 100%, right? So when it gets to 90%, we start getting congestion. At 95%, we start shutting traffic. At 100%, depending on when the call comes through, it may be, the calls may be prevented from connecting. So this is a very important chart to us. It tells us that the site is getting out of capacity. We've added as much capacity as we could have to the Harris sector that is serving this location. Harris coverage hasn't changed. I think the enhancements you're talking about are adding capacity and, you know, improving, optimizing the Harris facility. It is still the primary server in the area, and we've reviewed the fresh data of this chart here. Actually, the blue peak on the right is New Year's Eve, 2022. It just didn't show on the chart. The blue lines, the blue data on the right is the peak number of users, so that's showing around somewhere around 475.
Okay, now about
down, what they kind of explained TTI pretty well.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was just, the Seasons Resort, though, has not been, because that's within two blocks, right, of this new tower. And so when we look at the Seasons Resort, I know you had some analysis there, but I remember this data from when this was in front of us in 2019, and it's really pretty similar to the same. And I see that right here, you've got the Seasons added. And what's confusing to me is it makes that green line come all the way out, and that would seem to really change the gap analysis for this tower location. And that's my point, is it just seems that when you add that Seasons Resort, that green goes way out, and all of a sudden we don't have a coverage gap that we traditionally had. And so I you've answered my question. I don't want to take a ton of time still, because I have a lot of other questions, and I can see where it's at. It does seem to me, when you add that Seasons tower, which we approved and is only two blocks from this current tower, I don't see the coverage gap after that.
Can we show the coverage gap without Ski Run? That gap remains, and that was Charlie's exact point.
Yeah,
this gap remains when you go ahead, Charlie.
Within the yellow, though, there's no gray, and that's my point. Is it changes a huge amount of the gray and white to yellow and green, and my point is, I would like to see a current gap analysis with that Seasons Resort that we have already approved and is moving forward, to show that we would still need this tower in that location, because it's very controversial, as you know, and it doesn't fit within our current code and ordinance in South Lake Tahoe. But let me move on to begin.
This is that analysis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I do want to, Cody, remind you that we have other board members who have questions. I can come back to you. Let's try to move through the board. Are you done with that question?
Yeah, that question is done. I was definitely trying to move on as well. So I just was curious, looking at, you know, the fact that you work in this area, Charles, I believe you said the Northern California. How do you guys deploy in a national park when you're dealing with a national park in an area similar to this, where I would imagine there's, you know, placement that you work with the national park? I'm just curious how you would deploy in a national park.
Same process. It depends on the park. We currently have facilities in Yosemite National Park. We have facilities in multiple state parks across Northern California, Northern Nevada. We work with the governing office, right? We look at their code and what their recommendations are, what's the best place to site a tower in that area or a site in that area. So I don't know if I answered your question, but it's different depending on where we're at, but we always try to blend in and provide the least intrusive solution to the need.
Great. And would you share the information, what we've been told is very proprietary information, with the National Park Service on where you guys believe the best locations are? Because from what I'm told is that's proprietary, and we're, as TRPA, not allowed to have that information to figure out the best placements. And I would imagine with the National Park Service, you would have to share that information, because it's their national park and they're going to let you know where their towers can be.
I can answer that, Cody. If you go back to our 32 site analysis, we provide coverage maps and analysis for each of the alternatives, showing why those alternatives don't provide the coverage that we need. Some of them are on forest land. And I've worked on sites from Yellowstone to Yosemite, and we provide not as detailed information to the Park Service in terms of where to place a facility. There aren't as many alternatives in those situations for providing service into those areas, but we absolutely put facilities in those areas. There's no difference of information, no proprietary information that we're holding back in any way. And we can go through you have the alternatives analysis in your packet, but you'll see coverage maps from each one showing why they don't provide the service that we need.
Okay, yeah, I guess I was told much different information that we were actually asking for that information, and we were told that it was proprietary and was not available from, actually our executive director on this board said that we were asking for that information and it was not given to us by not just Verizon, but AT&T and the other telecom providers.
Well, so, I need to speak to that again.
Can I just interrupt for just a second? We have a lot of board members with a lot of board questions. Paul, I think you've addressed Cody's points. Madam Chair, can we shift to other board members?
Sure.
I have 15 seconds to respond just quickly that we do enter into non-disclosure agreements with third-party peer reviewers in order to provide all proprietary information for peer review by local jurisdictions.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I believe I saw Jim's hand next and then Ashley after Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have two questions. One is on the microplastics and one is on the gap analysis. Do you want me to ask both at this point in time, or I can just start with one?
Yes.
So regarding and this might be for TRPA staff. So regarding the microplastic and the shedding issue, I did hear from the applicants that they commissioned a study and the study came to conclusions of basically no impact. John Marshall, when you were sort of setting the table, I think I missed it. This is why I'm asking the question. Was that study, did we do a peer review or did we ask for a third opinion? And if we did, what were the conclusions and who did we ask that opinion of?
We did not do a peer review. What we did is just request any input from the Science Council. And I believe Julie Reagan's on the line and she can address this more specifically, but basically representative just looked at the Verizon provided study and said that it was reasonably done. It was not at all super in depth, but just looked at the basic format of the analysis. I think the two things that for us stood out from the study, and we have not heard anything to contradict this, is that there is a direct connection between these faux pine needles, which are made of PVC, and the kind of microplastics that are found in the lake that DRI found. And so that, without evidence that the plastic needles is the source of the microplastics in the lake, there isn't any evidence in the record that's been presented to us that shows that the faux pine needles are a source of what we're finding in the lake.
Thanks, John. That did answer my question. And I probably shouldn't have used the term peer review. I don't know if that's really necessary in this case. But certainly to run it by, and I'm glad to hear you say the Tahoe Science Advisory Council. I know, like, particularly in the space of microplastics, there's been a tremendous amount of work from some of the council members by the Desert Research Institute, as well as TURC. So I'm assuming if it went to the Science Council, that those were the institutions that at least took a look at the study to see if it looked reasonable.
No, I think principally it was, staff, task staff, not necessarily TURC. I don't believe reviewed it. So I would take it for, you know, just a very high level review. Is this something that, you know, fits within a reasonable examination of the issues, and look more at what is available, the actual science on the record, as to whether or not the shedding leads to microplastics in the lake. And that's where there is just an information gap. And it's also the fact that there is the type of plastics, microplastics that are found in the lake are not the PVC that you would anticipate from degradation of the faux needles.
Thanks, John, but I think I'm confused more. I thought, what do you say, staff? TRPA staff? Science Advisory Council staff? Did it?
Why don't I call on Julie Reagan, who can help me out of this mess, and she's the one who undertook this effort?
Yes, thank you, John Marshall. Julie Reagan, TRPA Deputy Director, for the question. Thank you, Member Lawrence. This was just an informal review, look-see, if you will, from staff, Bob Larson, the program officer for the Science Council. And Dr. Arianzo did take an informal look at that document that Mr. Marshall referred to, but there was no official peer review or science project around it, Jim. But we know there is a good body of work that is accumulating from DRI and the, you know, and the Turk, UC Davis folks. But there is a distinction made in that report between the monopine PVC, which is different than what is the emerging body of work that we're looking at in the lake, and the microplastics entering and being detected on the beach, which are more found in plastic water bottles in particular, and clothing fibers. So there is a distinction, but this is an ongoing area of research, and I think a lot more research will be done and undertaken in the coming days and months and years. So just, it wasn't an official peer review, but there was an informal look at the document.
Thanks, John and Julie. That helps me a lot. And I agree, it is a growing body of work, but there is a substantial amount of work that's been done, particularly by DRI. And so when you mentioned, you know, the executive officer for the Science Council, as well as the researcher for DRI, I'm glad we had that sort of independent check-in. So thanks for answering that question.
Can I ask a question to the chair?
No, the appellant, this is time for board questions right now. We'll come back in just a moment, but let's finish our board questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one more question, if I may.
And yes, go ahead.
This is probably to the applicant, and you know, I found the questions and the information regarding the gap analysis to be very interesting and fascinating. And if it's in all of the materials and I just missed it, I apologize. But is there, you know, and I get the color codes, the green and the yellow and the gray. What is the policy of Verizon, or maybe the industry as a whole? Is there an end goal? Is the end goal, when I'm thinking about future facilities, is the end goal to cover the entire basin in green? Or is there, you know, when you're doing your gap analysis, how do you figure out exactly where that gap is? You can see where there's areas that don't have as much coverage as others, but what is that end milestone that you're trying to achieve in the Tahoe Basin?
Charlie, would you like to take that?
Sure. So it's site by site, and as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of hours of analysis that goes into it. There's no goal to turn everything green. It's all about the need, right? So as you look at that chart, as the demand increases at such a severe rate here, we need to make sure the network is robust enough to stay ahead of that demand. So we look at the maps, we look at many maps, we look at a lot of data to find which location best offloads the network. Hair is in this consideration, in this example, and what the significant gap is of that area, which is the coverage map that I showed you. So overall gain is to make sure the network is robust and can any 911 call goes through at any time.
So if I could just clarify quickly, like I mentioned, it's like a set of sprinklers, but we're following where the call demand is. And a cell site can only cover so many people at the same time. And when that gets overloaded, we have to cell split and add a cell site that will provide capacity. And we have to locate it in a manner that it works with the other cell sites so that each phone has a dominant signal as it passes from cell site to cell site. So it's really demand-based. There are also coverage objectives for recreational areas or other areas where there might be a particular need, even though there might be not be a very strong demand. And that's how the network is established.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Thanks. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Ashley.
Thank you so much. I just had a question. I mean, I think that this one item is bringing up for us the comparison between, you know, maintaining a scenic viewshed and avoiding creating demand for more plastics and creating more plastic waste. So I'm interested in, I guess, from Verizon, where the industry is headed in selecting alternative materials beyond plastics for these types of towers that that still maintain scenic viewsheds, but that don't create demand for more plastic and engender more plastic waste within watersheds or these, you know, beautiful scenic areas.
Paul Wolbritton, again, if I may answer that question. The monopines came out probably in the 90s, and they were not that great. They've gotten a lot better. We've checked nationally the first time that this issue has come up for us. Generally, and even as we were approaching the approval of this facility, the TRPA board was asking for more branches and more aesthetic cover. And it's certainly, there's an opportunity for the board in conditions E and H to take the volume of plastic into account in finally identifying what the tree branch count will be, how high the branches begin on the bottom of the pole, and that sort of thing, and to take that into account in the final design. We're always looking for new opportunities in terms of how to stealth facilities, and I would say that the trend I am seeing much more these days is to put in water tanks, faux water tanks, and other types of unipoles. This particular facility is the type of location where you would want to put a fake tree, a faux tree. And so it is certainly something I think that the industry may begin to look at. I have to reemphasize again, as you heard, that the microplastics that were found in Lake Tahoe were 90% fibers and linens from clothing and plastic remnants from tires, as well as cigarette butts, and that the amount of PVC was extremely small, if at all. It was lumped in with other groups. It was so small. So this type of plastic, of course, is used in plumbing for homes. It's used for landscape irrigation and any number of things. And the amount of plastic going into this particular monopine has to really be compared to the amount of plastic that would go into a residential home or any number of other structures. We are aware of the issue, though, and working, I think, towards taking it into account going forward. There's an opportunity for the board and its conditions to direct a reduction if they care to do so, and then also these monitoring conditions. But again, these towers have been in Tahoe Basin for decades, and you're not seeing in the analyses done on the Tahoe water any high level of this type of plastic. It's linens, it's rubber, it's cigarette butts, it's plastic bottles, that kind of thing.
Yes, no, I'm not quibbling with that. I'm mostly just thinking long-term about trying to reduce plastics across the board, whether it's in plumbing or on these monopines. Just
it's a good suggestion
for where the industry is going in that direction. Additionally, I had this question earlier. I just, the amount of monitoring enforcement that will be needed to make sure that Verizon is actually going through and cleaning up the waste puts a burden on TRPA's staff to go out and actually do that enforcement. And so I do want to just signal here for the record that I do think we should have a consideration of a cost recovery account for public public employees to actually be able to bill to an account for those types of checks on towers in the area. I understand that there's a cost recovery account for permitting, but not for monitoring and enforcement of the conditions that are put into the permits. So just for public record, record, I'd like us to consider that and just think about what that cost recovery would be over time. As the number of towers grow through this area, obviously demand for staff time will grow. And that's, you know, basically putting public dollars into a business decision on these towers.
Verizon Wireless is putting an initial deposit of over $5,000 for the monitoring. It's part of the condition of approval. So I think staff has taken into account the economics for their time in the condition of approval.
No, I saw that. I think the 5,000, though, if you think about the lifetime of having to monitor this this tower and go twice a year, is insufficient for staff time to do that monitoring over time. So I'm just looking for, like I said, a cost recovery account to be paid into and billed against for staff time for all of the towers in the area. And I'd like us to consider that.
Of course.
Thank you, Ashley. Okay, I'm going to look to see if there's any other board member questions at this point. Yes, Shelley.
thank you. I'm not quite certain who to direct this question to, but with respect to covering coverage gaps, addressing coverage gaps, obviously elevation is important, I would presume. But based on the map that we were shown, there are a lot of small cell sites as well that have already been installed. And I'm curious, how do the towers relate and kind of interact with these small cell sites?
I'll again ask Charlie to answer that question, but generally the cell towers provide umbrella ubiquitous coverage throughout a coverage area. Small cells provide capacity relief in very small areas, sometimes the radius of about 500 feet. So they don't provide the ubiquitous coverage that allows you to go from one place to another necessarily, but they do offload the capacity demand for the in that immediate area of that small cell. And so they're used for that purpose rather than for coverage purposes. Charlie, did you want to add to that?
No, I totally agree with what you said, Paul. I just want to throw one comment on the small cells shown on the map that I displayed earlier are located along Highway 50, which is more offloading our Harvey site. So our Harvey's points down 50 and our Harris site points of Horsky Run. So all of those things are considered when we identified the gap. So the gap is shown in coverage and capacity for the Ski Run Boulevard site.
And one more question with respect to the small cell sites. Are they, are you required to get a permit for the installation of those small cell sites?
And are they absolutely
on private property?
Yes, we are required to get a permit for all of our facilities, encroachment permits, building permits, wireless permits for small cells in the right of way and on private property. And so we go through an extensive permitting process generally for all of our facilities in the Tahoe area.
The subject of structure fires was brought up. And I guess, I don't know who to direct this question to, whoever's in a position to answer it. I mean, I understand that there might be, and I think that Mr. Allbritton, you addressed this on behalf of Verizon, that the likelihood of a tower catching fire is pretty remote. But is there any, are there any statistics regarding, I mean, there are a lot of these cell towers in existence. Are there any statistics regarding the frequency of fires related to cell towers as opposed to power lines, for example, which are pretty ubiquitous?
I've been involved with wireless companies for over 30 years, and the fires that occur are generally errors by welders who are working on the tower and start a fire. The most well-known wireless fire was actually in the Malibu Canyon. It was a company called NextG had overloaded some SEC, Southern California Edison, poles that caught in a high wind down there, caused the pole to topple and start a fire. But there's no spontaneous combustion of cell towers. There's no, the antennas basically are taking RF signals through coaxial cable like you would have for your TV or something up to the antennas. The radios themselves are in the equipment shelter, and that's where you have heat from the radios, and there are cooling systems and fire suppression systems within the equipment shelter itself. The equipment is and the tower itself is monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by the Emergency Operations Center for the for the cell system. There's a 800 number on the front of every cell tower that you can call and reach the emergency operations center. So you will find photographs on the internet of cell towers on fire, and generally it is a welder or some worker who has created that kind of problem. It's not, they don't spontaneously combust. That doesn't happen. It's a metal, it's a heavy metal monopole that's going up inside of the faux tree. It's not going to catch fire unless it's going to melt if you have extremely high heats. The plastic on the outside has a flash point of 850 degrees, which is above the obviously the pine trees are going to burn a lot sooner than the plastic melting or burning. Our principal problem with wireless facilities going out in a fire like we have had here in Sonoma County where I am is that the fiber cable to the tower can be melted or burned by the fire either within the ground or above the ground. I would ask Charlie or Crystal, do you have any comments about fires on cell towers? I guess while they're racking up, I'll say also South Lake Tahoe Fire and Rescue will have to review the tower with respect to all of their requirements under the fire code for South Lake Tahoe. And we have to get a complete sign off from the South Lake Tahoe fire officials before it can be built. So it goes through every fire limit restriction that any construction would go through. And the building code has extremely high wind withstanding requirements, seismic requirements. All of these structures are built to sustain those kinds of weather and seismic activity and to keep the system running as part of a state network required for emergency operations.
I appreciate that. Are the needles coated with some sort of fire retardant? If there's a fire, for example, in the forest, I can imagine if the plastic burns, it might emit toxic fumes. How do you deal with a situation like that?
Yeah, I understand that they are fire retardant themselves, but not covered in a fire retardant. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Crystal, I don't know if you have any additional information on that. I guess not, but that's I mentioned the high heat that's required to even to get the plastics to react.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Shelley, did you have other questions?
No, that's it for now. Thank you, Cindy.
Okay. Cody has his hand back up. Cody, did you have questions?
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. Just going real quickly back to kind of what we were talking about before, Paul, with regards to entering into an NDA and working with the TRPA to come up with a regional plan, you guys would be willing to enter a non-disclosure that we, of course, wouldn't share your information with your competitors, but so that we can be informed to write policy that really creates a planning document that shows the best place for these towers. And my second part of this question is, does it not take the right location to really promote the best co-location, thinking that we really only want the least amount of towers to get the most coverage with multiple telecommunication companies? And do we not need to have that planning document for the entire basin to really get that done in the best possible way?
Cody, I've been asked this question. I mentioned I've been doing this for 30 years, maybe due to lack of imagination. But in the early days, the plan to cover the entire San Francisco Bay Area was going to be with 28 towers. That was in 1984, before the internet, before the mobile phone, before the mobile phone was combined with the internet. It was based on two radio frequencies. Today, we have Verizon Wireless will be operating on five radio frequencies. We at that time expected to have 2% market penetration for cell phones to people. We now have more cell phones in the United States than we have people. We've had the merger of the internet and the cellular network. So if you had asked us for a plan of what our network was going to be, there's no way that any of the carriers would have been able to tell you how that would have evolved. And that continues today. Small cells are a new technology. I'm sure you've heard about 5G. 5G is a new technology. The carriers are constantly trying to buy enough RF frequency, the real estate of cellular, in order to provide to meet the demand that they're facing from the community. They never know what frequency the FCC is going to sell to them. The last frequency was actually from the old UHF television stations, if you're old enough to remember that late night TV. And that was the frequency that was available and required the networks to be designed about that around that frequency, which travels a shorter distance than the old frequencies, but carries more capacity. So it's impossible to come up with a single planning document that's going to show you what the ongoing demand is going to be. It can be the construction of a hotel. It can be the construction of a bridge. It could be changes in traffic patterns that affect where the facility is going to go. And of course, changes in technology and how much data is put through, and the changes in terms of what we all use the cell phones for, and autonomous vehicles, autonomous buses, drones, and other wireless applications of the Internet of Things are all changing the demand supply network for wireless. So you can't just draw up a master plan and say, this is where I'm going to put my facilities. Verizon wireless engineers generally, and this is true of other carriers, generally look out about 3 years in terms of their planning horizon. And they're basing it on information like Charlie showed you, of the ongoing demand over 3 years, where the demand is coming from and where they have to put it. And with the planning processes that we have to go through, you saw in the latter slide that we can't keep up. We can't even keep up with the demand that we're seeing. And so we frequently have to change plans in the middle of the stream to try and get something approved and through. So it's really impossible to have a master planning document that would adequately or accurately describe what a network was going to look like, and it would be out of date before you completed the document. I just need to finish, and I'm sorry I'm talking too long, but very quick to say, the NDAs I'm mentioning are for a peer reviewer. So if you disagreed that we had a significant gap, which is not before the board today, but was before the city, you said we would like this third-party engineer to review your data to confirm that you absolutely need this site and this is the best place to put it, then we will enter into a non-disclosure agreement with that peer reviewer so that they get the data that they need and can give the city the appropriate guidance. But we don't give the information directly to the city or to a governing body like TRPA because of sunshine ordinances that make it impossible for us to keep that information confidential. But we will give it to a third-party consultant who can advise you on the information we've provided.
Thank you, Paul, for that response. I see another question. Is that Shelley? Oh, Belinda. We haven't heard from Belinda yet. Let's go to Belinda next.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that I feel kind of like, the mom in me is coming out, that, as we talk about the proliferation of our need for cellular devices, and, what we did to ourselves, as a society, by allowing smoking to get out of hand and then had to roll that back. I think that, hopefully we will learn from all these lessons. So I have not so much as a question as just a comment and saying that, I feel we do have certain strictures in terms of our responsibilities as board members today in the issue that we're taking up. However, I agree with many of my fellow board members in the issues that they've presented, and I particularly want to elevate the comments made by Member Comrade Seda, that, figuring out how to pay for all of this, which ultimately comes back to ourselves as consumers, that, it's a circular thing, but realistically, the agency cannot continue to bear these increased costs, because, frankly, there's not a bottomless pit here, and we have to be responsible for our government spending. So I just want to say that, yes, I think we can do better planning. I think we can do better in terms of addressing some of these impact issues. But at the end of the day, I think we all have to keep in mind what's our responsibility as governing board members in this context, which unfortunately puts some constrictions on what we can do. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Belinda. And we still have public comment to go to as well. So I know we might have more questions and comments after that. But Shelley, you had a question, one more question.
Shelley, very quickly, this is a question for John. John, have we ever considered including a permit requirement having to do with removal of obsolete towers?
Not that I'm aware of, but what this, and the only thing that's perhaps relevant here is that, as they perform maintenance and upkeep on this tower, they are obligated to use the best available technology at that time. But there is nothing in this permit that would require them to decommission at a certain point.
I'm not suggesting that, in other words, we can't necessarily determine when the poll becomes obsolete, but if in fact it is ultimately, for whatever reason, if it's ultimately abandoned by Verizon, shouldn't they be obligated to remove it and restore the area?
Yes, I think they should. I think we do have the ability to do that. I think, in particular because of the extent of the any plastic that's attached to it, and then the pole itself. So we can, if that's the board desire, we can further modify the permit with a condition requiring that.
Okay, all right. Thank you, John.
Thanks for that clarification, John. Belinda, your hand is up again, or did you not put it down?
I forgot to put it down. Sorry about that.
Okay, great. And then, Cody, you had another question?
I just have some questions for our counsel for John. Curious, so in the history with TRPA, we never really have devised a plan for large cell sites and the locations of them. And do we have the authority to devise such a planning document that would basically put approved locations that these sites could be at?
I think we do have the authority to initiate such a planning effort. The degree to which that, as you say, we can assign a particular spot, particularly if it's private property, to be available is something that we'd have to address at that particular time. But I think it is theoretically within our regulatory ambit. Obviously, it's going to come with, as you heard from Verizon's representative, the degree to which we will be able to get participation or buy-in on those particular sites over a particular time will be, somewhat questionable.
Okay. And my last question is, do we have the ability to force the co-location, meaning not just making Verizon open it up for co-location, but making the other telecommunications forcing them onto these towers instead of building a new tower?
I think the way that is accomplished is through the alternatives analysis, essentially to say that you have to co-locate unless you can establish that it is just simply not feasible to co-locate.
And we can make that happen through a third party, the analysis?
We could require a third party analysis to establish it, the fact that there is either is or isn't a reasonable alternative.
Great, thank you.
Okay, I'm not seeing any other board member hands. I did want to reach out to Mr. Gresser and ask him a question if I could. And I'm not seeing him here. Are you back on? Yes, Mr. Gresser.
Here I am.
So earlier you had a question or comment. I wanted to be more than fair here. I don't want to engage in back and forth too much for longer because we still have public comment, but I did want to ask you what your question was.
Very gracious of you, and I appreciate it. Very simply this. There's a zero discharge standard on hazardous waste into the lake. I think we can all agree on that. So why doesn't this impose an affirmative obligation for the prospective polluter, Verizon, to disclose and to inform itself as to what are all the contents, chemical compounds and otherwise, of these monopines? And why doesn't the TRPA itself have an affirmative obligation before allowing such a tower to understand exactly and precisely by chemical analysis every single component in a monopine to ensure that the discharges are safe? And if the answer is, well, we don't know, well, then the right thing to do, it seems to me, is postpone this decision and have such a study done by an independent expert so that you all can have a good idea of what is being imminently proposed to be discharged into the lake. That's all I was trying to get onto the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gresser. And you did that during your comments earlier, and that was so noted. So I appreciate that. Greg, I see your hand up, but I'm not going to continue the back and forth. Let's go to public comment now. And then if board members have questions again later, then we can go back to those. So we will now go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on these agenda item, on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either by clicking raise hand at the bottom of the Zoom screen or by dialing star 9 on your phone, and you will be called on and unmuted by a TRPA staff member. So I'm going to turn this now over to staff to start our public comment period.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first hand raised is Robert Aaron. Robert, you can address the governing board.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Chair, and members of your governing board. First of all, I just want to ask the biggest question. Is this consistent with the regional plan? First and foremost, I would love for the board to uphold this appeal. And going back to Mr. Albritton, the attorney for Verizon, saying that I believe it was the PVC that is being displayed off of the towers. He did not mention, he did mention fiber about clothing, but the materials that is used in these towers is called FRP in some of the towers. That's fiber reinforced plastic. Now, I want to go to something everybody on the agenda board and on the board should know about. AT&T and Pac Bell have been deemed that they need to remove a cable 8 miles long between Baldwin Beach and D.L. Bliss State Park. It is leaching lead. I believe microplastics to be the new lead. The cable is 8 miles long, and it has 3 pounds of lead per foot. I want to say that again. The cable is 8 miles long and 3 pounds per foot of lead. The microplastics is the same thing. What I would like to do is bring also to the attention that the engineer's decision on abandoning those cables decades ago, your decision today in denying allowing appeal for the permission of 112-foot cell tower is parallel to that. When they dropped those cables, they did not believe or think that they were going to harm the lake like they did. But one tower contains 2.5 tons of potential microplastics. There is a tower here near the lake that is within 1,000 feet of the lake. The proposed tower at 1360 Ski Run Boulevard has a small cell tower within 400 to 500 feet of this massive monstrosity of plastic that they plan on putting forth. I would ask that any responsible adult reevaluate their long-term decisions and when to evaluate the potential harm their decision might make. Thank you for thinking about these decisions. It means a lot to the lake. Thank you so much, and please save Lake Tahoe.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. Next commenter.
Next hand raised is the name on Zoom is Melina. You are unmuted on my end. If you unmute, you can address the board.
Hello, my name is Melina Walsh, and my family and I, including two young children, live on Ski Run Boulevard. There are several towers already installed on Ski Run Boulevard, and I can assure you we have no problem with the current cell service here. This is not about making a 911 call. It's about catering to out-of-town streamers. As long-term local residents, my neighbors and I strongly oppose the installation of this macro cell tower. Not only is it in violation of our local city ordinance, it puts the residents, wildlife, and the environment at major health risks due to radioactive emissions and plastic microparticles shedding into the lake. It is very common on Ski Run Boulevard for floods and atmospheric rivers to flow from the top of Ski Run Boulevard down into the lake. The informal review that you're saying was reasonably done is based on what Verizon provided to you. There was no official peer review. It was never questioned by a third party. Anybody that lives here knows the flood zones and rivers around Ski Run Boulevard and the atmospheric rivers that flow into the lake. Very common. I feel very disappointed and discouraged that our concerns have been ignored all this time, despite our continued objection voiced in many of these meetings. We ask that you please hear us now and grant appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace.
The next hand raised to comment is Ben Leibovitz. Ben, if you are mute, you can address the board.
Hi, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. I want to firstly address Don Carmichael. The visual representations provided by Don Carmichael are completely inaccurate. The professionalism that he concludes is of merit is admissibly wrong. From the screenshot that I took of the drone footage, the drone was positioned above the tree line. Therefore, the trees below the tree line, there is no possible way that the tower would sit below the tree line in the simulations. I am also a professional Photoshopper and designer. I work for Google. I have worked for Apple, I've worked for Verizon, I've worked for AT&T. He should be fired for what he is providing. It is admissibly incorrect. And Don Carmichael, I hope you lose your license to fly, etc. But my real point here is that if you go to verizon.com/coveragemap, you'll see that they advertise no lack of coverage in the entire basin. How can you sit here and listen to them tell you that there is a lack of coverage with their public communication and advertising agenda to share that there is such a need? There is not. There is a plan in place to adequately provide coverage where it is lost when we have a great number of visitors, and it is done in a safe way. My last point is, what is the limit? What is the limit before the committee, before the TRPA? What is the limit that you reach? What is the limit to the onslaught of emotional distress between the community? What is the limit for our 2.5 years, 3 years of fighting this battle with inaccurate information? What is the limit that it takes to have the TRPA review a permit with accurate or inaccurate information? What is the limit for an individual resident to uphold the TRPA standards for their own endeavors? What is the limit for providing solutions to the housing crisis for the TRPA? What is the limit that we allow ourselves to create ADUs that are within the standards of the TRPA? What is the limit for inaccurate information from the land and sensitive materials provided by the TRPA? What is the limit before you're charged, legally committed to negligence for your actions by approving a permit that has misinformation?
Mr. Leibovitz, your time has expired.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leibovitz. Okay. Next commenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will make a last call for comments on this item. If any member of the public would like to comment, please raise your hand now by clicking on the hand raise icon at the bottom of your screen or by dialing *9 if you have called in. We do have one more hand raised. Noel Farmer, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Noel Farmer, and I live in the affected area, and my family has had a home here for 50 years. So we've seen a lot of changes at the lake. And I now have grandchildren, so the fourth generation is now utilizing this place when my grandchildren come to visit. My first objection to this is when we were going back to the original approval, I did receive notice from the TRPA about the installation of this pole, and I was informed in that notice that I would later receive a notice from the city informing me of the Planning Commission's meeting. I never received any such notice and had no opportunity to speak against this in the first place. A couple of other things in taking notes through these presentations. There was mentioned that there is no possibility of any of this pollution reaching the creek. That creek happens to run behind my property, and there's another creek that is part of a spring that runs through my neighborhood that drains down onto the street and runs nearly year-round, and all of that debris will blow out into Ski Run Boulevard and enter that creek, whether it goes across the street into the drain where the creek goes under or just simply blows westward and falls into the creek. It is absolutely going to reach the lake. There's no question about that. Another thing that came up that was interesting is in looking at that gap coverage. I'm in that gap coverage and I have three bars right now. So I have no problems with my cell coverage here. So I'm not sure what they're talking about. And then they showed that coverage with and without the pole. And the area that is yellow, there are no houses. So I'm not sure, and there's not even a road. That's up at the top of Ski Run Boulevard, and there's no road. No one lives up there. Another consideration that came up that I did not ever get an adequate answer on is what would be wrong with moving this tower 200 yards up the hill and putting it on top of the water tank? That accomplishes anything from, I don't know how their technology exactly works, but it seems to me that would put the tower on a height comparable to Harris and would certainly give you a broader coverage. And no one seems to have broached that subject, not to mention the fact it would be virtually invisible on top of that water tank. And lastly, I'd like to point out, I think we all have an obligation to look back at history. Lake Tahoe should have been a national park. And it was just sheer happenstance in Congress and fighting that Yosemite became a park and we did not. And if you look back at the traffic plans and engineering maps that were done in the 50s for what was going to be here, the freeway around the lake, the bridge across Emerald Bay, the 250,000 people that were going to be living here, and we stopped it. And the TRPA was formed as a result of that. The first director of the TRPA was my father-in-law at that time. So I am infinitely familiar with the workings. Thank you for your time. I would like to see you uphold this appeal. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Farmer. Catherine, do we have any other public comments?
Madam Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, with that, then we're going to close the public comment portion. And before we go back to board member comments, questions, et cetera, I wanted to assure both the public and the appellants and the permittees that we've heard and diligently sat through quite a bit of discussion on this item today. We also have received a tremendous number of emails, and I know on behalf of all of the board, that we review those and take into consideration all of your comments. So they're greatly appreciated by the board, and I want to assure you of that. For purposes of today, there are some limitations on our direction today and our actions that we can take today, even though there's many, many issues wrapped up in this discussion that are broader points of discussion, I think, for the future. So with that, I wanted to call on John Marshall to discuss that and kind of direct our board discussion at this point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only context I'll provide is that before you are three requests, or actually just two requests. One is on behalf of staff with the consent of Verizon to modify the permit to include condition 11 regarding the faux pine needles. We also have an errata that went out last night that was a result of Shelley and myself looking at the indemnification language and strengthening it a bit to make certain that it covers a concern regarding increases in frequency, et cetera. So that is in your errata as well. And then is to take action on the appeal. And if you'll remember, the appeal is to an existing permit. And so your action that's being requested for you is to revoke that existing permit. So with that general frame, and we can talk about the voting patterns when we get to the motion making, I turn it over to the board for discussion.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that. Okay, board members, once again, I see some hands and I want to encourage you to put up your hands and be aware that I will try to get to everybody in a somewhat quick order. So Ashley, let's start with you.
Thank you. I just had a question about something that John said earlier and that came up in the discussion, just with the permit modifications. It appears that our permit modifications that are before us are not as expansive as our discussion. So our discussion included modifying the permit such that, you know, that we could essentially have less plastic needles or fewer plastic needles, modifying the permit to potentially, you know, require that Verizon pay the cost of tower removal and site remediation. From my estimation, we would need a bond for that. So that's a lot of significant modifications that we don't have before us. And I'm just wondering what the extent is on our vote today.
John, would you address that?
Yes. I think we can you can provide direction to staff to modify, with the conditions and generally describe them, and then we can set that language. I think it'd be important to have the basic performance measures. So for site remediation and disposal, for cost of, add to the bond that's now required, the cost of the additional inspections. If staff believes that we need to increase that amount. And I think that's the two that you mentioned. The other one was the design change. TRPA staff, and I know we have Bridget Cornell on available. She was the principal planner. TRPA staff looks at that the amount of faux material as a way of concealing and providing scenic protection. And so that's what the density is, what we decided was appropriate for the scenic considerations. I think, you're approving, or the hearings officer approved a site plan that had the basic density set. It's important for us to stick with the site plan unless we believe that fewer branches can accomplish the same scenic levels of protection for this one. But I think for those towers coming forward, I think we can be more sensitive to that balance between the amount of plastic utilized and the protection gained, or the protection necessary to keep the scenic ordinances in place or in compliance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John. Other board member questions or comments? Yes, Mr. Bass, Cody.
Sure, thanks. So from my perspective, I feel that we really, I think why we're here for this appeal is a lack of planning on the issue. And I really believe strongly that for us to get what we need with regards to communication facilities, we need to do a robust analysis of what exists and really where we're trying to go and what we're going to get. And I respectfully disagree with Mr. Albritton around the fact that that's a constantly changing thing. That very well may be true in the Bay Area where we have large development happening all the time. But here in Lake Tahoe, this board thankfully has stopped development, and we are not going to see massive development that is going to change the needs of our infrastructure for communication. And so from my perspective, we really need to show the communication industry that this is Lake Tahoe. We are tasked to protect the environment of this region and this basin. And 120-foot towers and making and ensuring that we only have what we need of those towers is critical, especially when it comes to the FCC's power against local government. We have only 60 days when a submission of a tower is submitted as a local government to approve, or the tower is automatically approved. That is an issue. And I think that the TRPA has the authority to create a plan that advises where these towers can go. And I would hope that we would get the experts that can tell us exactly where towers should be so that they can all be co-located with all three major telecommunication companies, and we can actually have a real plan. But I do believe it needs to start with this appeal, not only because we need to show that we are willing to take on the telecommunication industries the same way we took on the casinos in 1980. We can do the same thing now, and we must protect the basin. And it's not that I'm saying we don't need cell phone towers. I do realize that we have gaps, but we need to do that in the most professional possible way that is the best way for our environment. So for me, it's about planning. It's not about stopping cell phone towers. And that's why I'm not afraid of the litigation, because I believe if we start the planning effort, we would not ever reach litigation before we finish that effort and then allow cell phone towers to be constructed in the best possible places. Also, this tower currently does not apply to the current code in South Lake Tahoe. That is something that did change from 2019 to now. The code, though, was adopted when the hearing officer heard and approved this permit. As I know, he is not bound to our city code. It, in my opinion, should be taken into consideration, especially when I look at the map on the Seasons deployment that hasn't happened, but we have approved as a city. That is within two blocks of this cell tower, and it clearly makes a big difference in the gap of what they are trying to fill. So for me, I will definitely be voting to uphold this appeal, and I would ask that the board really please take that into consideration, not to stop cell phone deployment or even Verizon, but to have a much more informed plan and position for us to work from. Thank you.
Thank you, Cody. Other board members with comments or questions?
Hey, Cindy, this is Jim. I'm slow to find my hand raise function.
You can wave too.
And so thank you. And I'll try to be brief. You know, this has just been really difficult, quite honestly. You know, lots of great points and a lot of good discussion, you know, on all the points. As I was jotting down notes and from the planner and me, and I do want to say, you know, in many ways, I agree with what Cody is saying. I do think that we have more work to do. I think we have more work to do regarding design standards. It was just mentioned, you know, what is that design standard to find the balance between meeting our scenic standards, but not damaging the ecosystem. You know, certainly a lot of talk about gap analysis and co-location. To me, that kind of falls under location standards. How strong can we be in requiring co-location? How do we look at gap analysis? I'm not entirely comfortable with what the process is. It seems a little subjective to me. Then we get into the microplastic issue, and And then just recently, what Cody was mentioning, the hearings officer, you know, recommending approval or approving, but not necessarily being consistent with the city's most recent ordinances. And I think that's an issue that TRPA needs to take a look at. I know it's not a requirement. It needs to be considered. But maybe it needs to be a requirement moving forward. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking it needs to be looked at. All of that being said, I think the agency does need to take a closer look. But at the same time, I am a firm believer that at a minimum, a public agency needs to review and make decisions based on the law and the code that we have to work with. If we're going to make changes, we need to make changes, but that should be moving forward and not necessarily to an entity that already has an application in under our current rules. So that kind of tipping my hand where I'm thinking about this. So I just want to say there's good points from everybody, and I do think the agency needs to take a look. But when I'm voting, I'm going to be voting basically on, you know, the hearings officer decision and whether it met or did not meet the TRPA code. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Do I have any other board members who would like to weigh in? I am not seeing any other hands or signals or waves.
Did I ask Cody, a question just of Mr. Marshall?
Yes, go ahead, Mr.
With regards to adding conditions to the permit, what about a condition such as one of the requirements of why we had a setback in the city was the diesel generator that has to start every Wednesday, has a diesel tank there. We know there's battery technology from Tesla and many other companies that would actually suffice the ability for that backup. Could we require that be a battery because of the distance of the residence instead of a diesel generator?
I think, yes, you could if there is a basis to make that decision. So that is, you know, something that the board could consider, but make sure that you have a basis in the record for your decision on that issue.
Could a basis point to the city ordinance and the setback?
I don't think the city ordinance, in and of itself, provides you with the necessary substantial evidence to say, here's the reason why a battery as opposed to a diesel generator is appropriate. You would have to look, I think, specifically at that issue to make certain that there's a reason why in this location.
What about our zero sustainability goals as a city, that we have zero sustainable, you know, net zero goals by 2030?
The city's goals, I think, again, are the city's goals and should be taken into account when the city takes action. The other thing that was just relayed to me is that Tesla charging also comes with its own particular, you know, potential impacts that need to be addressed. So make certain that your record has that in it. And, you know, while this issue is a new one for the TRPA process, Cody, so I'm a little hesitant to say that we have a good record to make that change, unless there is something in the record that we can point to that establishes why a Tesla charging battery might have less impact or required instead of the generator. We've approved generators, I think, with all our other cell towers. And so I don't think at this point we have a basis to say, to force them to choose some other emergency source, unless there is something in the record I'm unaware of.
I would just say that within the vicinity of a residential home, because you're having to start a generator every Wednesday, you're having a fuel truck that's showing up to fill up the tank. There's many reasons where a battery would be so much better for the homeowner, the neighborhood. And really with the technology, it doesn't need to be Tesla or anybody else. There's technology that, you know, can run a cell site for 24 plus hours. And then there's deployment of a mobile generator. If it went over 24 hours, that Verizon could easily figure out with their engineers that they have. So either which way, I think it is a requirement that we should consider, just to try to help, the appellant here to try to find a middle road for them. And I think that could be something that really could maybe help, our neighborhood here in South Lake Tahoe as well.
Thank you. Any other board member comments or questions, discussion on? Yes, Shelley.
Yeah, I am. I'm happy to attempt a motion if we're ready for one.
It sounds like we are, Shelley, and thank you for attempting.
I can get through them. Just want to make a few kind of introductory remarks. You know, as a private citizen, and it doesn't come as much of a surprise to my fellow board members, I've been pretty transparent about my concerns regarding the possible impacts of electromagnetic energy on human health. However, as a member of the TRPA governing board, I'm more constrained. As pointed out in the TRPA staff report, the agency is a creature of federal law and must defer to the FCC on general matters related to human health and environmental impacts of RF emissions. As a member of this board, I see no factual deficiencies in the staff's analysis and conclusions or any evidence of Tahoe-specific adverse impacts of RF, although an amendment, as we have discussed earlier, to the permit has been made to address the applicant's concern about needle shedding. So with that, I move to approve the findings contained in Attachment B to the staff report, including a finding of no significant environmental effect, subject to the following amendment. The second paragraph of Section 2 shall now read, quote, the installation of the monopine facility will not harm public health, safety, and enjoyment. The remainder of that paragraph remains unchanged. That's my first motion.
If I may just clarify, Shelley and I discussed this issue that she just identified and what she accomplished by making that edit to the finding is that we are not making a determination on the safety of RF emissions. Rather, we are looking at the tower, the presence of it, the tower itself. That's what your finding is based on, not making a finding regarding the relative safety of RF, since we are deferring to the FCC's determination on that issue.
Okay, thank you, John. So we have a motion. And then, John, do you want to go over the voting protocols here?
Sure. As we discussed earlier, this is a... the context in which it's coming to is that there's a permit that's been issued. And so you're making a determination on whether to modify or revoke or leave the permit alone. All those votes require the same voting pattern, which is a 5-9 vote. So that means 5 affirmative votes from California and 9 votes overall to either modify the permit or in the case of the request of the appeal, to revoke the permit. So that's the voting pattern that we're looking for it'll be the same for each one. We, to be consistent with staff recommendations, it would be to vote yes on motions 1 and 2, and to vote no on motion 3, which would be the revocation of the permit under the appeal. If there's any questions, I can address them.
Board members, any questions on what John has just covered? Okay, with that, then I'll turn it over to Maria for the vote.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Bass?
No.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay. I further move to modify permit number ERSP 2019-0389 for the Verizon Wireless Monopine, the special condition 11 as set forth in attachment A and is modified by the errata sheet distributed earlier today, which states parenthetically that the design, installation, or operation of any improvements, in parentheses, including any increase in tower operational capacity or signal characteristics such as frequency or strength. In addition, a condition shall be added requiring Verizon to remove the tower and restore the area if at some future date the tower is abandoned or deemed to be obsolete. Furthermore, Verizon shall enter into good faith negotiations with TRPA to develop a cost recovery agreement that more accurately reflects the agency's cost of monitoring the maintenance of the monopine and removing any associated debris.
Thank you for your motion, Shelley. Are there any questions on that motion? And if not, I will ask Maria to call the roll call.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Bass?
No.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Yes.
Ms. Aldeen?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you.
And finally, I move to grant an appeal, which motion should fail in order to affirm the hearings officer's determination.
Thank you. We have a motion. Are there any questions? Okay. Maria?
Ms. Aldeen?
No.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
No.
Mrs. Sagaski?
No.
Ms. Faustinos?
No.
Ms. Hill?
No.
Mr. Bass?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
No.
Ms. Gustafson?
No.
Mr. Rice?
No.
Mr. Honigman?
No.
Ms. Williamson?
No.
Ms. Novosel?
No.
Madam Chair, that motion fails. The appeal is denied.
Okay. And once again, I'd like to thank everyone who testified today and provided comment. I think it was a lot of good discussion on our board and direction for our future as a agency as well. So with that, I have just texted Mark to return back to the meeting. And as soon as he appears, I'll turn the meeting back over to Mr. Bruce.
Hi. Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks for your patience on this. Really appreciate it. So I'm going to jump right back onto item 9. Is that where we are?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. So now we're on item 9, reports. I'll pass it over to Joanne to give us the executive director status report.
Mr. Chair, I have no report this month. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much. Let's see. I'll ask John. John, you've had plenty of work today. Do you have a further report?
No, I do not.
Okay. Governing board member reports. Does anyone have a governing board member report? If so, do you want to just jump in? I'm going to look to see if I see any hands, but I'm guessing there won't be. Somebody, I'm not seeing the hands right off the bat here.
I think Shelley has her hand up.
Shelley, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I never lowered it.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay, so no governing board member reports, committee reports. Anything from local government and housing?
Not now, thank you.
Legal committee, nothing from me. Operations and governance, Shelley?
No, nothing from Mark, thank you.
Okay, sure. EI Transportation, public outreach, Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing really to report. We did not meet. I do want to thank Julie and TRPA staff for sending out a summary of some of the good news, or a lot of good news, that came our way regarding EIP funding coming out of Washington, D.C. I want to thank everybody that worked so hard to really get some needed funding for environmental improvement works, including our congressional delegation. So it's really nice to see all of those wins that we got over the last month. And so thanks, staff, for sending that out to the governing board members.
That was fantastic news. Thank you so much for everybody's efforts on that. Forest health and wildfire, Bud. I think he's not here today, correct? And then RPIC, Bill.
I think Bill has left the building.
Okay, very good. It looks like we are closing this thing up with the final public comment period. I'm going to read through the rules real quickly. Our final matter of business is our general public interest comment period. Any member of the public wishing to address the governing board on any item listed or not listed on the agenda, including items on the consent calendar, may do so at this time. Individuals or groups who have already commented on items listed on the agenda are not permitted to comment on the same topic. The governing board is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public during this public comment period. We'll hear comments on any single topic not on the agenda for up to but not to exceed 30 minutes. We'll hear as many unique comments as possible, and we will hear comments for up to but no more than a total of 60 minutes. All unheard comments can be submitted via email to mambler@trpa.gov and will be forwarded to all governing board members. If any member of the public wishes to speak at this time, please raise your hand now, either by clicking the raise hand at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone. You will be called on and unmuted by a TRPA staff member. At this point in time, I'll turn it over to Catherine.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, this is my first actual TRPA meeting. Future agenda items I didn't realize should have been in the board member reports, and I'm just wanting to ask about re-agendizing the discussion around planning for future cell sites as we move forward at some future agenda.
I will jump in on this. Cody, we have a priority setting process, and we will take that up as an agenda item in our priority setting process.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Joanne. Catherine, do we have anything?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a hand raised. Doug Flaherty, you unmute, you can address the board.
Great, thank you. I'm assuming that everybody can hear me since I hit the unmute button.
Yes.
Chair Bruce and members of the governing board. So today, I'm going to be following up actually in the next few days connected with a submission today under public comments to the governing board having to do with an appeal a Washoe County Board of Adjustment appeal that was heard yesterday, very late last night, by the Washoe County Commissioners. That appeal involved Ann Nichols Group, the Granite Bay Condominium Owners Association, and myself. The Washoe County Commissioners denied both mine and Ann Nichols' appeals points. I think we've exhausted our appeal process through Washoe County, and we're coming to the TRPA board. I'll be following up in the next few days, trying to, with staff, trying to get the appropriate paperwork completed for an appeal and a complaint against Washoe County and the TRPA, and I'll briefly explain that. So this complaint and appeal basically is against, the complaint is against Washoe County and TRPA. The appeal is, of course, on my behalf regarding the denial of my appeal last night. The complaint itself is against Washoe County and the TRPA regarding the failure to meet applicable sections and intent of the federal TRPA bi-state compact and the TRPA code of ordinances in connection with the approval of the special use permit that was appealed last night. So I just wanted to go on the record to make that statement and to let you all know, whether you've seen it or not, the clerk has distributed the request to the TRPA. You guys should have that. So I will be following up in the next few days to get all the process points figured out with the staff on how to go about this. My points are included in the copy that was distributed to you guys today, and that's really all I have.
Thank you. Appreciate it. John, any comment?
Sorry, yes. Just we'll be discussing with Mr. Flaherty in the coming days, but the action that he is seeking to appeal is an action taken by Washoe County under local law, not an action that was taken as a matter of delegation. And so it is not, first reading his papers, it is not appealable to this body. It is a separate action for a separate permit issued by Washoe County for its own processes. But I just want to make certain I understand Mr. Flaherty's concern, and so we'll be discussing that with him in the coming days.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. Okay, Catherine, is there anybody else with public comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Robert Aaron, you are unmuted and can address the board.
Thank you very much, board members. I just wanted to let John know and the board members, I will be personally filing a Proposition 65 against the proposed tower on Ski Run. Thank you very much.
Thank you. John, any comment?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks, Catherine. Any final public comment?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I will make a last call. If you have not already and would like to address the board, please raise your hand now by clicking on the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone. Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment at this time.
Okay, then it looks like we are moving on to item 8. Adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Hearing none. Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thanks so much, everybody, for your patience. And thank you for your hard work and your efforts today. And I'm looking forward to next month. Cindy, special thanks to you, Cindy, for stepping in.
Thanks, Cindy.
Thanks, Cindy.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.